Year off your energy bills. Here's Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch.
What the government needs to do is start drilling our own oil and gas in the North Sea. I don't want to be in a situation where people are panic buying fuel. People are very worried.
To Heathrow Airport, where the building of a tunnel has gone from 66 million to 555 million. Why can't they get their sums right? Talking about getting your sums right.
Final details will emerge today about the motor finance compensation scheme, but there could still be twists in the road. I'm Christian May from City AM discussing this with Nick shortly.
Plus, counter-terror police will investigate that horrific car ramming in Derby. Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer is to host business leaders in Downing Street later to discuss the economic impact of the Iran war. Number 10 says the aim is to hear directly from firms and discuss how ministers and the private sector can work together. Talks are expected to focus on Tehran's blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, which has disrupted global oil supplies. Speaking to LBC yesterday, the Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson stressed the UK isn't facing a fuel shortage.
Supply is there. People should carry on as normal through their daily lives, whether that's at the fuel pump or through their use of energy in the home. And we've got measures in place to make sure that we are protecting consumers.
President Trump has warned that he could take the oil in Iran and potentially seize its major fuel hub of Harg Island. On Friday, 3,500 additional US ground troops arrived in the Middle East. But speaking on the Air Force One plane overnight, Mr. Trump told reporters that he thinks a peace deal is within reach.
I would only say that we're doing extremely well in that negotiation, but you never know with Iran because we negotiate with them and then we always have to blow them up. I think we'll make a deal with them, pretty sure, but it's possible we won't.
Police are continuing to question a man after a car hit and injured seven people in Derby city centre. A 36-year-old was detained on Saturday night on suspicion of attempted murder. Counter-terror police are assisting with investigations, but Derbyshire police say there's no wider risk to the public. The final details of the compensation scheme for drivers missold car finance agreements will be published later. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said 14 million deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. Average payouts are expected to be around £700 per agreement. Global uncertainty linked to the conflict in the Middle East is thought to have weakened home buyer demand in the UK. Zoopla says the number of agreed sales in March is down by 2% annually. The property website says the market is relying on movers who already have mortgages confirmed. And Sean Dyche and Roberto De Zerbi are among the favourites to replace Igor Tudor at Tottenham Hotspur. The interim boss left Spurs yesterday after just 44 days in the job. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 99.67. It closed down 5 points on Friday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.16. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Lidl, treat yourself to a whole Easter lunch for eight for under £1.60 per person with all the tantalising trimmings. That's a leg of lamb, carrots, potatoes, parsnips, mint sauce and, of course, the gravy. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. See lidl.co.uk/spendless for details.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Monday, March the 30th. Coming up in this hour, the so-called unholy alliance between the left and Sir Tony Blair. It has to be stopped, otherwise widespread anti-Semitism will continue to grow. We'll give you full details on that. As you heard on the LBC News Bulletin, investigations continue into that horrific car ramming in Derby.
A night of horror for seven people seriously injured after a car ploughed into pedestrians on a busy street of bars in Derby and a 36-year-old man arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. I'm LBC's George Ike, live at the scene.
To Heathrow Airport, where costs continue to escalate, a tunnel under Heathrow, projected to cost £66 million, is now at £555 million pounds. So we've got another HS2, albeit slightly smaller at this stage, another HS2 on our hands. We'll look at that in more detail. If we're talking numbers, it looks like the government have become lamentably behind on their plan to build homes. I asked Housing Secretary Steve Reid back in November of last year, will they reach the government's target of building 1.5 million of them, 1.5 million homes by the end of this parliament?
We are, because it takes some time between putting in an application, getting planning consent, and then getting spades in the ground and having the home, you're not going to see them yet.
The reality is very, very different, and we'll spell it out for you. Plus, never mind broken Britain. What about broken in Britain? Police failing to solve a colossal 92% of burglaries in Britain last year. Well, Met Police Commissioner Sir Mark Rowley told me back in December that progress is being made when it comes to London. Progress is being made in cutting crime.
There's lots to be proud of about London. Clearly, there are some crime issues that we're tackling, and it's not perfect, but I'm proud of the progress we're making at reducing crime.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Any of you catch a piece in one of the newspapers yesterday, the Sunday Times? It actually went to an American media outlet called the Free Press, and then was taken on by the Sunday Times, and is making some headlines today. In it, Sir Tony, former Prime Minister Tony, now Sir Tony Blair, says the left must end its unholy alliance with Islamists to help stamp out widespread anti-Semitism. He says, and I quote, "The problem, under pressure from party activists and part of the Muslim community, many progressive politicians who sincerely reject anti-Semitism are not making the arguments and failing to take on this literally unholy alliance between parts of the left and Islamists in our own societies where ideology leads inexorably to anti-Semitism." He also says, "We end up in the bizarre situation that a community, relatively small in the case of Britain, which on the whole works hard, does well, and gives proportionally more philanthropically than any other, is targeted by bigotry, and in any other case would provoke not just firm action, but a concerted attempt to challenge the ideology behind it." Well, let's explore in more detail. This is a response, by the way, yesterday on LBC, speaking with my colleague Lewis Goodall, response from Dr. Wajid Akhtar, Secretary General of the Muslim Council of Great Britain.
Honestly, I can't hear what Tony Blair has to say over the dying sounds of a million Iraqis. I think anything he has to say should be filed in the dustbin of history. What he has to say really isn't worth talking about. Not only him, but there are many others. This is how you make yourself relevant. You want to get relevant? Just say the most unhinged thing you can think about immigrants, about Muslims, about black people, about Jews, and you will find yourself a platform. You'll find yourself people who are benefiting off this.
Well, hopefully more level-headed response from Jonathan Hall, who is a KC in the UK's Independent Review of Terrorism Legislation and State Threat Legislation, and joining me now. What do you take from Sir Tony's comments? Good morning to you.
What I take from it is a warning from history, which is that if you play with Islamists, you end up playing with fire. We know this from our experiences in the 90s and the 2000s, when people thought that if you allowed Islamists to, you know, just do their thing publicly, that it would be okay. And we had the terrible consequences of Abu Hamza and al-Muhajirun. And I think it is a total mistake to think that if you bring Islamists into the big tent, they will become more like you. I think what will happen is they will push you to become more like them. And in the case of anti-Semitism, I don't think that they are going to become less anti-Semitic. I think they will make those they are in bed with more anti-Semitic. So I agree with him, and I think it's worth, first of all, calling out, but secondly, I think even more important is doing something about it.
Such as what, Mr. Hall?
I think there are two things. I've been thinking about this. On the whole, with terrorism, I think that the UK has been fairly effective when it's done two things. The first is rhetoric, and to say this is a problem. And here, in the case of attacks on Jews, is to say that it's an attack on all of us. The second thing is to do something about it. And I mean, here, I think it is about funding proper enforcement of existing laws. Because my worry from the terrorism perspective is that at the moment, people are publicly painting a target on the back of Jews and saying they are legitimate targets because they are responsible for all the ills of the world, in a way that I just don't remember seeing when I was growing up, that degree of hatred. And it just seems to me that it cannot be right that our current laws don't allow people to be prosecuted for targeting synagogues, Israeli-owned restaurants, for making comments about people which amount to saying, cleanse them off the face of the earth. So I think that we need to go beyond diagnosis. So I agree with Tony Blair, but something needs to be done. Rhetoric, in other words, saying we all suffer as a matter of national security if a minority is targeted in this way. It's not going to stop with Jews, but it's bad enough when it's with Jews. And secondly, concerted funding of a proper response.
So Tony writes, in its opposition to Israel, this alliance, as he calls it, has found an animating cause. The war in Gaza has allowed it full rein in pursuing it. How is the distinction to be drawn between the activities in Gaza by an aggressive Israeli government from ordinary Jewish folk trying to go about living their lives in the United Kingdom?
I don't think it matters at all. It's a fundamental point, isn't it? It's not about trying to draw some philosophical difference so that you can protect Jews from the consequences of what Israel's doing in the West Bank. It's much more fundamental than that. It's about just getting rid of hatred, full stop. And I don't think it's about descending into the details of Middle Eastern politics. It's a fundamental and simple point. You do not go about calling for hating so openly and violently members of society. We would not accept that with any other member of society, whatever else is going on in the world. And so I wouldn't even play that game of trying to draw some historical or geographical distinction. It's about hatred against a minority, and that itself is bad for national security.
Lastly, Tony Blair says that after these attacks, whether it be in the United Kingdom or in Australia, political leaders issue words and statements, which he says he believes every single one of them means it, but they mean nothing. They result in nothing. That's fair, in my view, that seems a pretty fair criticism. So if you concur, what does need to be done?
Well, the doing thing is the resources. I think, I mean, you will have seen that there have been some incidents where, for example, men drove shouting, allegedly, rape the Jews through a well-known part of North London.
Yep.
And for reasons that I think still mystify, this did not result in arrests and prosecutions. So whether it's about setting up a unit, co-locating police and prosecutors, I don't know. But the law is there, and I think it's got to be dealt with. It's got to be used properly.
Thanks, as ever, for your input. Appreciate it, Mr. Hall. Jonathan Hall is a KC and the UK's Independent Review of Terrorism Legislation and State Threat Legislation. Listening is Aisha Ali Khan, who is a human rights activist. Start with the same question with you, if I may. Your reaction to Tony Blair's piece, as published yesterday. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, it was quite interesting that this piece has come out now, literally a month into the Iran war. And yeah, it was just really bizarre that despite everything that has been going on for the last, you know, since 2023, Tony Blair took it upon himself to write this article and basically blame Islamists for everything and this sort of far-right and unholy alliance. It was just very, very bizarre.
When you say blame them for everything, what do you mean blame them for everything, Aisha?
So, obviously, if you look at the article, Tony Blair is talking about this unholy alliance between the far left and the Islamists,
you know,
and this rise in anti-Semitism in the UK. And, yeah, it was just very, very... it just wasn't nuanced enough. And I was disappointed because Tony Blair is not a dumb person. He's a really smart person and he's made very questionable, wrong choices, actually. It was just very, very unexpected, I would say. I'm being kind, by the way.
Okay, but if you look at the article, it starts at its very point, the very starting point, referencing the attack on those ambulances run by a Jewish charity in North London. That's what he's talking about, isn't he? So that's not blaming them for everything. It's blaming them for the attack in North London, isn't it?
So can I just point out, Nick, we have two people arrested and they're British nationals and we don't know their motivations.
Absolutely.
We don't know their we know their nationalities, but we don't know their ethnicity.
No,
we don't know their religion.
He then uses that to talk about the issues of anti-Semitism, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So he uses that as a staging point for his views on why anti-Semitism is flowering, not just in the United Kingdom. He references France, Germany, Spain and the Netherlands. Surprisingly, he doesn't reference Australia with the appalling attack down there. So surely he's on a point there, isn't he? I mean, it is, how does one, as I asked Mr. Hall, Aisha, how do you differentiate between understandable opposition to events in Gaza and deciding to take it out on Jewish people in the United Kingdom?
So right now, sorry, just I want to pick up on a point before I forget, Nick. We don't know the motivations behind why these people did this horrible thing with the ambulances.
But in
the
second
London.
Paragraph, he talks about 3,700 incidents of anti-Semitism with a sharp increase in attacks on visibly Jewish people. I'm quoting Tony Blair directly. So we do know those. So my point is, how do you differentiate? You can have the understandable opposition to events in Gaza, but that doesn't mean you take it out on a Jewish bakery in North London.
I agree.
So how
completely.
Do we differentiate?
I think that the anti-Semitism, the increase in it, and it's totally unfair because many of the people that live in the UK have no... I mean, I have friends, by the way, Nick, so I'm actually talking to people. I have many Jewish friends, I have many Jewish Israeli friends, and I myself visited Israel some 2.5 years ago, before the war. And I just find it baffling that people would take it out on people that have nothing to do with what is going on in Gaza, in Lebanon right now, in Iran. So it is a worrying thing, and it is something that we need to talk about, and we need to tackle. We just need to get rid of this, this rising anti-Semitism. But at the same time, Nick, I speak as a Muslim woman. Yep. There's been a massive increase in attacks against Muslim women, against visibly Muslim.
Indeed, and that needs to be stopped. So I just come back to the point that Tony Blair is talking about that arson attack. That's why, and I'm sure that there'd been a similar attack on a Muslim community, it would have been the same. It's the arson attack that prompted that article. Aisha Ali Khan, thank you. Human rights activist, thank you. Thank you for your input on that. So, how is that distinction to be made between events in Gaza and people running a Jewish bakery or a Jewish restaurant? We'll look to that. Plus, in other news, counter-terror police to investigate this incident in Derby.
As is common practice for an incident of this nature, our officers are leading the investigation with the support of counter-terrorism policing colleagues. This does not mean the incident is currently being treated as terrorism.
That's Derbyshire Police's Chief Superintendent Emma Aldred. Plus... No, you can't. Labour is on course to build 400,000 fewer homes than Sir Keir Starmer promised at the last election. More details later in the show. 7:16, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is to meet business leaders to discuss ways of reducing the economic impact of the war in Iran. Police are continuing to question a man after a car hit and injured 7 people in Derby city centre. And millions of drivers will find out later how they can claim compensation for missold car finance. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Two lanes are closed on the A13 westbound just before the Canning Town flyover. It's because of an ongoing police investigation and there are queues back to the Beckton flyover. Very busy on the North Circular Road westbound to Honos Grove following an accident. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Marylebone flyover and the Northern roundabout because of the ongoing bridge works. So definitely do expect long delays again this morning. Also, the problems on the trains continue on London Overground. The Mild May line is suspended between Dalston, Kingsland and Stratford. And then on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan line, but the delays on the Bakerloo line have cleared, and Lancaster Gate and Swiss Cottage stations both stay closed.
This is LBC.
The all-new, all-electric Toyota CHR Plus. Sleek, stylish and quietly reliable. Available with 0% APR representative with £1,500 deposit contribution and save £1,500 with the electric car grant. Get that Toyota electric feeling. Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Price from £34,495. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most. With fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
You know, Kayak isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 20 minutes after 7. Come to your calls, Peter. You'll be the first caller in a moment. It is, as they say in the newspaper trade, a classic Sunday for Monday. I don't think any two newspapers have the same front pages. So let me just go through some of them, some of which, of course, we'll be picking up. The Sun, very punchy headline. Well done. Broken in Britain. Police failed to solve a colossal 92% of burglaries in Britain last year. If you are a victim of that, it must be so distressing. I'm very fortunate. I've had my garage broken into, I've had my car broken into on many occasions, I've had my car stolen, and that's distressing enough. The idea that they actually get into your home must be awful. We're looking at that later in the show. Do give me a call if you've been affected by that. Also, the front page of the Daily Express, we're going to be looking at that in more detail. Kemi, my plan will cut bills by £200 a year. These are the energy bills. We're going to go around with our fuel tracker in just a moment, or three, by the way, as I don't know if you noticed over the weekend, the cost of unleaded and diesel continues to soar. The front page of the Daily Mirror, horror on the street, and there is possibly a counter-terror police officer. I have no idea, but she's crouching by the side of the road where that attack took place in Derby City Centre. We have a report on that for you later in the show. And let's just finish now. The betrayal of the Strivers, says the Daily Mail. Fury. Benefit claimants get 6.2% rise this week. MPs, £3,300, and the two-child cap is scrapped. The front page of the I newspaper tells, how long has he been there? The boss of Tottenham Hotspur has been sacked. It can only be about month and a half. Oh, 43 days, it says it here, 43 days. Oh, that's right, a month and a half. It's like moving deck chairs on the Titanic, say fans. Oh dear, that is bad luck if you're one of their fans. Extraordinary to watch, isn't it? Front page of the LBC app, all details on the latest developments. Well, they don't really seem to be moving forward at any great pace, but Trump plans to take the oil in Iran. Starmer holding crisis talks. And is also, that's one of the lead stories on the Sky News website. Right, that's what you got. Peter's in Stirling. Peter, let's talk about Sir Tony Blair and his comments. What do you take from them? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'd like to start by saying how disappointed I am. Iraq war and Afghanistan aside, and those are some big putting them aside, I do think that he was a great unifying figure when he was Prime Minister. I was still a kid at the time, but I remember him talking about his middle way, I think it was, or the third way or whatever, mm-hmm. where he talked about bringing together those in the centre-left and centre-right. He has gone after one side of this, and I don't want to play the whole thing of saying, well, let's ignore the anti-Semitism, let's talk about Islamophobia. Let's talk about both on equal ground, and
But I don't know if you've had an opportunity to read the piece. Obviously I have, and it starts with, if the arson attack on four ambulances run by a Jewish charity last week in London were an isolated incident, and on it goes. That's his whole kick-off. That's his starting point.
But, Nick, that's the problem. I'm not saying that it isn't an issue. It's a massive issue, and I really condemn those people. But in the same way, last week we had someone from the Conservatives saying that Muslims praying in public was an act of domination. Why don't we... Right, hear me out.
Why can't you divorce the two?
Why would you divorce the two?
The point he is trying to... Oh, Lord... There have been 3,700 incidents of anti-Semitism. There have been attacks. People have been killed in other parts of the country. People have been killed, actually, in other parts of the world. People were killed here last year. Why can't you accept that that has to be addressed by someone who has the position of Sir Tony Blair?
But, Nick...
Why does it also have to include the scourge, which is appalling, of anti-Muslim behaviour as well? Why can't he just talk about this?
Well, why do religious leaders...
Why can't he talk about this?
Nick, hear me out for a second.
I'd like you to answer the question.
Why?
And I tell you now, had there been a Muslim charity ambulances, it would have been quite right that he spoke about that and did not reference anti-Semitism. Why won't that be allowed?
Nick, I have heard rabbis, imams, heads of churches attack both sides of it equally and saying it is politicians and extremists using that as an exploitation to radicalize against ethnic and religious minorities. Why don't we talk about it in no uncertain terms and say we reject all of it?
Because he's a former Labour Prime Minister who's concerned about how some aspects of the left, some elements of the left, are to use his words, I stress his words, in an unholy alliance with the Islamists. As a former Labour Prime Minister, he's in a position to talk about that, Peter. Goodness me.
Is he in, here's the thing. He, as I said, his entire shtick was the middle way. Talk about all of it. He was not a progressive. I was a great fan of his domestic policies, I will say. I believe that centrism really has kind of died in this country, and we should really move back towards the centre-left and centre-right. But
all right. Peter, thank you for that. We will take more views, I think. Always good hearing from you. We're just going to agree to disagree, but do it in a favourable fashion for today. We're talking about energy prices, so let's go round those petrol pumps.
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
And there goes gasolina. So my first fuel tracker is Daniel in Golders Green. Now, when we first started on the 10th of March, which is what's the date today? Oh, my God, it's only 20 days ago. You could get a litre of unleaded at 134.9 and diesel at 142.9. When we last spoke exactly a week ago, that was 148.9, so unleaded had gone up some 14p. Diesel is at 166.9. That had gone up 24p. Daniel in Golders Green, what you got this morning? Morning Sport.
Well, good morning to you, Nick. I can report that here in London, today, Monday, prices at the pumps have gone up again. A litre of unleaded is 151.9 and a litre of diesel is 179.9.
Wow, that's a whopper. Daniel, look after yourself. Safe driving. So that, if you look from the start, just 20 days ago, that's gone from 134 to 151. Unleaded, 142 to 179 for diesel. Daniel, thanks. To the other end of the country, Murdo's in Auchtermuchty. G'day, Murdo. What you got? Morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Just to remind the listeners, it was 132.9 unleaded when we started, 145.9. When we spoke exactly a week ago, they'd gone to 149.9, 176.9. What you got now, Murdo?
Unleaded has stayed stable at 149.9, but diesel has risen to 181.9.
181.9. Safe driving to you. Thanks. So that means that since we began, unleaded has gone up 17p in, 20 days, and 145 has gone up, my God, has gone up 36 pence. We'll go around the rest of the country later in the show. On to other matters, and as you've heard on LBC News bulletins, and indeed I mentioned when we went through the front pages of the newspaper, counter-terror police are now investigating that horrific incident in Derby. George Icke is LBC's reporter in Derby, joins me now with the latest details. George, this morning, what you got?
Nick, good morning. Well, what should have been a Saturday night out on payday weekend, just like any other, became one of horror for people on Friargate here in Derby. It's a busy street lined with bars and restaurants. And at around 9:30, a car was driven at a group of pedestrians, leaving seven people seriously injured in hospital. This man, who wants to stay anonymous, lives on the road and told me it was shocking to see what had happened.
It's very busy usually, especially like Saturday nights and stuff. It's just, yeah, a lot of students, a lot of people. It's full of clubs and bars, and it's usually a very like happy area, and yeah, everyone's out. I don't know. So yeah, it's very unfortunate.
And Nick, looking at the scene yesterday, which has now reopened, there were shoes strewn across the road, clothing left on pavements and wrappers from first aid items lying all around the bars that line that road. Eyewitnesses described it as a scene of chaos, with blue lights from emergency services rushing to help people and injured victims lying on the pavements and road waiting for help. A 36-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder, causing serious injury through dangerous driving, inflicting grievous bodily harm with intent, and dangerous driving. And at this time, he remains in police custody. Chief Superintendent Emma Aldred gave this update at the scene yesterday.
The arrested man is originally from India, but has lived in the UK for a number of years. At this stage, I am unable to give any further details about him. As is common practice for an incident of this nature, our officers are leading the investigation with the support of counter-terrorism policing colleagues. I would like to clarify that this does not mean the incident is currently being treated as terrorism.
We now also know that the suspect was stopped on the other side of Derby City Centre around 7 minutes after this is alleged to have happened, with police praising members of the public for reporting the whereabouts of the vehicle. Nick, for now, detectives continue to piece together their investigation. Yesterday, I watched forensic teams combing this street meticulously for hours, along with a special drone unit from the force who were flying a huge drone over the scene to record any little bits of evidence they could see. And officers are also appealing for any witnesses who are yet to come forward to get in touch with the police.
George Ike reporting for LBC 729. Williams in Harrow to comment on Sir Tony Blair's comments that were published yesterday, or published in the United Kingdom yesterday. What do you want to say to it, William? Good morning.
Well, I want to say that it's wrong to burn the ambulances, of course.
Of course.
But, and I think it's naive for Mr. Blair to think there won't be a backlash against what's going on in the Gaza and in the West Bank. You have people who were starving and they were in the queue. In the queue to get the food, and they were shot.
Okay, William, what's your view of Donald Trump?
Donald Trump is a bully.
Therefore, would you think negatively of Americans in this country as a result of Donald Trump's policies? Do you blame Americans in the United Kingdom for what Donald Trump is doing? The answer, as a sane person, is no, of course you don't. So why do you blame Jews in this country?
Excuse me.
You said that Tony Blair is wrong, and I'm making the point, you said because of events in Gaza. You have to learn to differentiate between what Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli government is doing in Gaza from what Jewish people in the United Kingdom, many of whom have no truck at all for Mr. Netanyahu, just as you wouldn't blame Americans in the United Kingdom for what Donald Trump is doing, William.
I don't disagree with that.
Good. Well, I'm glad we had a nice chat. Have a good day. 7:31, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Payday, if you're a motorist.
Final details will emerge today about the motor finance compensation scheme, but there could still be twists in the road. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this with Nick shortly.
Time to get into gear, release the handbrake, and it's a green light, and any other motoring lines you want to throw in. Have I told you the time? 7:31, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. News time, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is to host business and energy leaders in Downing Street later to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. Oil prices rose by 3% to $115 a barrel when markets opened in Asia overnight. Police are continuing to question a man after a car hit and injured 7 people in Derby city centre. A 36-year-old was detained on Saturday night on suspicion of attempted murder. And the final details of the compensation scheme for drivers' missold car finance deals will be published later. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said 14 million agreements between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I suspect there might be a lot of other people who bring forward claims of not dissimilar nature to try and show, too, that these social media sites, the manner in which they are delivered to you, inspires a behaviour that could lead to some very, very disastrous consequences for you. The door is now open to a court deciding that, yes, in this 20-year-old woman's case, was true. The use of social media early made her addicted and her depression worse.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
It's happened again. All you said was barrel leg. Now she's looking at you like Nadine isn't your real name. Look at you go as you explain volume cocoon is a key shape for the season. 100% cotton, you say? No way, she says. And then, oh, a little extension of the trouser leg. Check out that pleat. Then you break the news. They're from Primark. Only £16. Be a good friend. You can borrow them. Hopefully she'll forget that. Shockingly chic for £16. That's so Primark. Available in-store and on click and collect.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
UK.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 7.35, a lot of calls coming in concerning Tony Blair's comments, and we'll come to those in just a moment. Let's dive into the world of business. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, and you heard him just before the news headlines talking about what could be a payday. I had made a note of it. Is there something like, yes, 14 million possibly of us, because I think I'm one of them, 14 million of us affected by these events between 2007 and 2024 as regards motor cars. Christian May has the details. Morning, Christian.
Good morning to you, Nick. Yes, it may feel like it's been a long time coming, but millions of drivers will find out later this afternoon, I believe, exactly how they can claim for compensation from the mis-selling of car finance schemes. The city regulator, the FCA, will outline its final rules on that process. Not necessarily the end of the road, because it's possible still that lenders and industry groups on the other side of the fence we'll kick up a fuss and say, hang on a minute, we need to look at this again. The background to this, of course, is a very long-running, multi-billion pound mess, which included rulings at the UK's highest court, setting out whether or not people who were sold motor finance schemes were unaware of the commission being paid to various agents along the way. Now, what this means is that millions of people, about 14 million such motor finance agreements were struck, could get an average of around 700 quid if they are deemed eligible for deals made between 2007 and 2024. As I say, this regulatory scheme could be still subject to legal challenges by lenders and others who say it's too broad. Billions and billions of pounds, by the way, on the line. And most banks and others involved in these schemes have set aside that money. But they're likely to still look at it again and see whether or not they can challenge some of the details of it. But no one's going to get rich off this individually, £700 or so thereabouts. There's nothing to sniff at, not least when you consider perhaps slightly uncertain economic times we're going into. I suppose the main message from the regulator is do not click on one of these social media adverts promising to get you your money.
No.
One of the main elements of the scheme is that banks, when it kicks off, will be required to get in touch with you. Nick, keep your phone on loud to tell you whether or not you are eligible.
I think I probably am, actually. It's thought that each case could be around £700 on average, so I think I might be in for a little bit of a windfall. And don't respond to those calls you get either when they say they ring you on your mobile phone, as happens ceaselessly with me. Up to other stories. Kemi Badenoch on the front page of the Daily Express. She reckons she could shave £200 off people's energy bills, and Sir Keir Starmer now getting involved. What's he saying, Christian?
Well, oil has surged again over the weekend, Nick. It's north, as I look at it right now, I think it's still north of $115. And I have to say, it's very, very alarming. The number of analysts and economists who are now saying, look, this war could end today, and oil prices are going to remain elevated for 6 to 12 months. So the impact is going to be quite painful and a long tail, even if, as I say, things start to wind down in the Middle East, which does not look like it's going to be the case. The Prime Minister is now trying to get a grip of this situation. I mean, what can he do, really? I suppose he could take some of the fuel duty and VAT off fuel at the pumps. But that's just one symptom of a multifaceted crisis when it comes to energy. The Prime Minister is now summoning bosses from the city, including HSBC and Goldman Sachs and others, along with insurance industry leaders and, of course, energy bosses, people from BP, people from Centrica. They're all heading into Downing Street today. They're going to hear an update from ministers on the security situation and the UK's response to the crisis and how and if and when they may get involved. It'll also be an opportunity for ministers to hear directly from industry. And it's not always gone terribly well when the government hauls in bosses like this. I think this is more of a summit, a sharing of insight and ideas. Last week, the end of last week, I think there was a chancellor who said she wanted to summon in the bosses of retailers and supermarkets so she could wag the finger at them about profiteering. And none of them turned up. That is to say, they said, no thanks, we're busy. I don't think they appreciated her tone. But this is going to be a slightly different one, I think, quite a high-profile, high-powered round table. People trying to understand what the government's got in mind. Starmer says he'll use every lever available to try to prevent households from being hit by these energy prices, whether that includes taking some of the tax off the bills that we're all obliged to pay, is something we'll keep an eye on.
Christian, I will leave it there. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, thank you, because I've got another business story to turn to. The time is 7.39 and pressure is mounting at Heathrow Airport. Yesterday, it was the Sunday Times reporting the cost of refurbishing a network of tunnels under Heathrow has gone from £66 million to £555 million, according to a report prepared for the airport. And it gets worse. In today's Daily Telegraph, the headline, Airlines Call for Breakup of Heathrow Airport. In an article for the Telegraph, Willie Walsh, who's head of IATA, the International Air Transport Association, they act for more than 360 carriers, says what is needed is Heathrow is a full reset. The current model for Heathrow concentrates too much control in the hands of a single operator with insufficient competitive tension and weak cost discipline. Well, let's bring into the conversation Surinder Arora, who's founder and chairman of the Arora Group. Now, that's one of the UK's largest private owner and operator of hotels, and also has plans, alternative plans, for development at Heathrow. Surinder Arora joins me now. Good to have you on, Mr. Arora. Can you just remind listeners that the cost of Heathrow's plans, and given what we hear from Willie Walsh at IATA, what it could do to passenger charges? Morning, Surinder.
Good morning to you, Nick. Good morning. Well, look, I think yesterday reading the story about the tunnels, which, by the way, the work started 13 years ago just to refurbish two tunnels, is 11 years late, and the cost has just gone through the roof. And yet Heathrow now want to dig under the dig a tunnel for the new M25 under the new runway. What are the chances of that succeeding? Something that we've been saying for a long time is just not viable, it's not affordable, it's not deliverable. So, you know, the idea of the competition has been there for years and decades. That is a huge monopoly, and hence we have become the most expensive airport in the world.
And this is what Willie Walsh, the head of IATA, is talking about, of course. So if more competition is allowed in, and I remind the listeners, you and you've put together a consortium and a group and you're ready to do more, I mean, what sort of prices is the Arora Group looking at?
Well, the initial costs that came in, or the estimates came in from HAL to build the new runway and the terminal was 33, 34 billion. Ours was 23 billion. One of the things we've been saying for a long time, we should not be even looking at thinking about going over the M25. It will be a complete disaster. Environmentally, it will be a disaster that we shouldn't even think about that. But the government have chosen the scheme. We obviously will at least welcome the government's decision to expand Heathrow, which we all say we need from a nation perspective going forward, from business travel, leisure travel, everything. I think we all need the extra capacity, but we can certainly deliver something that is far more deliverable. And we've been working very closely with the airlines for a number of years now, and I think it's always good to come in and deliver what the customer wants. I mean, what Heathrow are talking about is literally building the new runway, the cost being a million pounds.
Yes.
Thank you, pardon. Or a million per metre. Now, if that's not gold plating, I don't know what it is. And last year, you may remember, I was looking through the transcript yesterday, you may remember that Thomas, the CEO of Heathrow, came to you on the same show.
Yeah.
When you asked him about the new car parks, and you asked him the question of, well, I understand that you're looking at spending £2.6 billion to build new car parks. And he said, well, actually, don't recognize those numbers, and said the answer was no. And yet since then, they have come out and said under the new plans, they will be spending £2.6 billion for the new car parks at Heathrow. Now, that is more than what Gatwick Airport are spending on the new runway.
Lastly, again, Willie Walsh writes, passengers who now pay about £26 to fly from Heathrow, and this is individual passengers now as opposed to, but that could rise to up to £65 to use Heathrow. And Mr. Walsh points to the success where there's joint operational structures of airports such as John F. Kennedy in New York or LAX, Los Angeles International Airport. Surely that's the message to the government, a joint operation at the very least. Surinder.
100%. I mean, I was reading the Telegraph, the front page today that you mentioned it earlier, and Heathrow are saying, well, actually, there can be competition amongst airlines, but not for the airport. Now, how can that be right under any circumstances? At the end of the day, we should all welcome competition. Competition is something that will benefit the consumer, the airlines, and we should be welcoming that rather than, no, we don't think that's a good idea.
Grateful for your time. Surinder Arora, thank you. Founder and chairman of Arora Group. They, of course, with other companies, have put together a counter-project. We'll see how that develops, because, as I say, pressure building at such a level for Heathrow Airport. Surinder Arora, thank you for that. Let's get one call. We'll go a minute late to news. Sophie in Wanstead, what would you say to Tony Blair and what he says about events in North London and elsewhere in the United Kingdom? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I want to comment on that, but it's a quick thing about one of the callers. Tony Blair is a twit. He created a complete international mess, and I have no respect for his opinion. So he needs to be quiet, number one. Okay. Number two, you said to... honestly, he's just completely denigrated this country's reputation in the world. But the other thing is, you said to a caller, rightly... And please remember I said rightly that not every Jewish person, and I'm going to say it sounds cliched, I've got Jewish friends, they don't agree with Netanyahu.
No,
that every
here.
Jewish person does not agree with Netanyahu. Now, that needs to be applied to the other side. Not every Palestinian is a Hamas terrorist.
Oh, absolutely right.
But Gaza, the Gaza Strip has been decimated and razed to the ground because they've got Hamas terrorists hidden everywhere, in the kitchen, in the cupboard, under the bed, which well, we know is not true, Nick, which we know is not true.
Well, in some... I don't know if they're in the cupboard, but in some instances they have used kindergartens. That's been accepted by the United Nations.
No, but they've why don't they let journalists in, Nick? Why do they not let journalists in?
That's a question you'd have to ask the Israeli authorities. There's no shortage of journalists brave enough who want to get in there, but unfortunately, unless they're effectively taken very brief bus trip, it doesn't happen. Sophie, thanks for your views. Got to move on. Already late to the news and later in the show. They can't. The Labour promise to hit that 1.5 million homes is lying in tatters, and we'll explain why later in the show. 7:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is to host energy and business leaders in Downing Street later to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. Police are continuing to question a man after a car hit and injured seven people in Derby city centre on Saturday night. And the final details of the compensation scheme for drivers' missold car finance deals will be published later. LBC weather. Scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 clockwise to junction 30 at the A13 and then on to the QE2 bridge. It's because a car has broken down and one lane is closed. The A127 remains very busy westbound from the halfway house up to Great Worley, and that's following an accident. Also, long delays on the A13 westbound from the Beckton flyover to the Canning Town flyover, and the North Circular Road slow westbound to Bowes Road at Arnos Grove, and that's also after an accident. On the trains, London Overground Mild May line is back up and running now between Dalston, Kingsland and Stratford, but with delays. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan and Bakerloo lines.
LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on, with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison, starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve the perfect one instantly. Get £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
From the big transformations to the small home improvements, you can feel as proud as a peacock with Wix.
Go from bucket list to booked with EasyJet. Get package holidays from £319 per person and flights from £32 one way. So stop dreaming, stop scrolling, stop umming and ahhing. Book now at EasyJet.com and get your holidays sorted today. Get out there. Selected dates and flights April to September. Limited availability. Holidays after protected. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We'll come back to our conversation about the words, views of Sir Tony Blair in a moment, but that's a former Prime Minister. Let's talk about the current Prime Minister, because Sir Keir Starmer will launch the Labour campaign saying they have your back. This is a local election campaign, and the Prime Minister will be in the West Midlands. Of course, this is a build-up to the vote early in May. More details now from what we're going to hear from her boss and the PM, Emma Reynolds, Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. I have a note, Secretary of State, that we're going to hear he or you, the government, has our back, but council tax is going up by at least 5%. Water bills are up. Car taxes are up. Mobile phone and broadband costs are up. And the cost of a TV licence is increasing. How on earth can the Prime Minister suggest he's got our back? Good morning, Secretary of State.
Good morning, Nick. Good to be with you. Well, from this week, we will see energy bills come down by, on average, £117, thanks to the decisions that we've made in government. We are freezing prescription charges. We froze rail fares earlier in the year for the first time in 30 years. We know that people are struggling with cost of living pressures, which is why we're determined to help them. So we'll, as you say, we're launching the local election campaign today in the West Midlands. We'll fight for every vote. And we're telling people we're on their side. We're also investing in communities through Pride in Place, unlocking people's pride in their communities and giving them some say also about how those funds are spent locally.
Right, they're probably more worried about unlocking their cars at the moment. Car tax up, water bills up, fuel up, mobile phone up, broadband up, TV licence up. You've not got the their backs. Oh, you've not got our backs at all, have you?
Well, obviously we can't step into every private market, but we are helping when it comes to...
You could.
Well, no, not that one, but the other ones that you mentioned are private markets.
Well, let's talk a little bit about fuel, if we can. Have you noticed what the prices are for a litre of unleaded and a litre of diesel? Do you drive a petrol car or a diesel car? Or do you have an electric
car? I drive a petrol car, and yes, obviously, like other drivers, I have seen that prices have gone up.
What did you pay last time you bought a litre of fuel? Can you recall?
Yeah, it's about 150p.
Yeah, exactly right, 148.9. Why don't you... Other countries are looking at temporary cuts on excise duty. I think they've done it in Ireland and elsewhere. Why won't the government do that? That would have our backs, wouldn't it, Secretary of State?
Well, we have frozen fuel duty twice since we came into
September, isn't it?
Well, that is in place until September, but we will make decisions around that given what the situation is at the time. But we are also leading international efforts to de-escalate the conflict in the Middle East because, obviously, of the impact back home, but also the impact of people in the region.
One of my colleagues has kindly said, in Ireland, excise duty has been cut by 20%. In Portugal, the government have reduced the tax on petrol. In Poland, VAT has been cut on fuel. Spain has done likewise. In Sweden, duty on petrol has been reduced. Australia will halve fuel duty. The United Kingdom, nothing. Why?
Well, as I said, we are helping
got that freeze, I know, but
energy bills, and we have frozen fuel duty. Look, the Chancellor keeps these things under review. You'll have heard that she made a statement last week in Parliament. We are meeting as a government through COBRA and continue to meet to discuss how we can help people. We're keeping a very close eye on the situation. Energy supplies remain stable, but you're right, some of the prices are up. The Chancellor has made it clear that we will provide targeted support for those most in need should the energy prices continue to increase. But as I said, thanks to the decisions that this Chancellor made in the budget last year, energy bills will come down from this week, and that will be throughout the price cap period. So bills will be capped until the end of June, and we're keeping a very close eye on what's happening.
But for people who use heating oil, you may be aware, Secretary of State, I appreciate this isn't in your actual...
But I do. I use heating oil.
You use... My goodness me, yeah. How much yours has, I would imagine, more than doubled, hasn't it?
Yes, there has been a very sharp increase in heating oil. And so I know the problem. So I am the Secretary of State for Rural Areas, and I happen to live down a country lane.
Right,
and
so you are dependent on oil. Right.
The problem with heating oil is you have to buy it when you see that your tank is low. And so you have to make a decision, or a decision is made for you if you're obviously running out. So it is a problem. But obviously the Prime Minister put in place a £53 million package a couple of weeks ago for those on low incomes who are dependent on heating oil. But yes, it has increased significantly.
But I mean, I've got notes here that people were paying £1,100 in parts of Scotland. They're paying £3,000 now. Now, they're probably not vulnerable, yes. But that's going to hit almost everyone, isn't it? So what is the government doing about that?
Well, as I said, we have provided a support package for people on low incomes. The problem for providing a blanket approach, like Liz Truss did when she was Prime Minister, that it adds significantly to the national debt. And then we as a government and the taxpayer end up paying so much to service that debt. So we are paying about £100 billion to service the debt that we inherited from the Conservatives. That's why the Chancellor has said that we will provide targeted support. So as you can imagine, this is the sort of balance in government and the trade-offs that we have to consider every time we make a big decision like that.
We'll move off from fuel after I just tell you, you're probably aware the boss of Asda, Alan Leighton, has said there could be temporary shortages of diesel. How are you going to prevent panic buying? What's your message to those, particularly who use diesel, Secretary of State?
Sure. Well, our message is the same as the message that you'll have seen in recent days from the RAC and the AA, which is to buy fuel at the petrol pump as normal. Supplies are stable. I think Asda also provided a qualification of those comments that were made. We are not seeing shortages of petrol. And we are asking people to follow the advice,
what
not
about
just from the government.
Sorry to talk over you. What about diesel fuel, though, Secretary of State? Isn't that the concern Mr. Leighton cited?
I think the AA and the RAC have said across the board, when it comes to filling up at the station, at the petrol station where some people buy diesel, as you said, is to fill up as normal and go about their everyday business as they would usually. The supplies are secure. That's the advice, as I said, not just of the government, but of the AA and the RAC.
Isn't there a solution in part to this, which is what we're going to hear from Kemi Badenoch would scrap VAT on energy bills, would save consumers £200 a year. That's going to grab everyone's attention prior to the local elections, isn't it, Secretary of State? That's the answer, isn't it?
Well, as I said, the Chancellor keeps all options under Well, I mean, you know, come the budget in the autumn, she will consider, she keeps all fiscal decisions under review. But as I said, thanks to the decisions that the Chancellor made at the last budget, energy bills are set to come down by an average £117 just this week, and the bills will be capped for until the end of June.
Let's finish, if we may, by coming to your rural affairs brief. You'll be aware possibly of a report that says Labour is on course to build 400,000 fewer homes than was promised at the last election. Instead of 1.5 million homes, it will be 1.1 million homes. That's a massive failure, isn't it, Secretary of State?
Well, look, we have made some of the most radical changes to planning for generations. Obviously, those changes are coming through now. The house starts and finishes will begin to accelerate through this Parliament because of the changes that we've made, and we are still committed to 1.5 million homes.
You'll say you still think you can reach that target then, Secretary of State?
We still think we can reach it, and we've already put through planning changes so that we can get there, but obviously as they come through, the numbers will start to accelerate as we get through further into this parliament.
Grateful for your time. The Prime Minister will say today that Labour has your back as he launches Labour's local election campaign. He'll be in the West Midlands. Some details there from Emma Reynolds, one of his senior colleagues, Environment Secretary. Thanks for your time, Ms. Reynolds. 7:59. We'll go a minute late to news. Hugo in Romford. Right, that's what the current Labour Prime Minister is going to be saying. What about a former one, Sir Tony Blair? What do you take from his words? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Nick?
Good, thank you. What do you say to this?
My initial reaction was, why is everyone, as usual, obsessed with when anything comes out for Jews or against Jews? And what made me really upset was when this caller, one of the previous callers, a couple of them actually said, it's horrific what happened to the ambulances, but, there was a big but, if you notice. And I just feel that if these people who believe anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism, in that case, why do the people who are anti-Zionism go attack the Semites? That usually will mean that it's linked into one race.
How do we make that distinction obvious, Hugo? I don't think we've really wrestled that to the ground in this hour. A last word from you on that. How do we make that distinction evident?
Well, for starters, you said to one of the previous callers that if Donald Trump does something, that doesn't make Americans.
No.
That's not so correct in the sense of if Benjamin Netanyahu does something, it's not the Jews in England's fault, because Jews are not Israelis necessarily.
I hear exactly what you're saying. That's what we've explored. I'm glad we got you, and I know you did get your points across, but the music means we must move on. And we move on with Broken in Britain. Police giving up on an extraordinary high percentage of burglaries that go unsolved. And are you one of those unfortunate victims? Plus, here's Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch repeating calls yesterday for the government to drill in the North Sea.
What the government needs to do is start drilling our own oil and gas in the North Sea. I don't want to be in a situation where people are panic buying fuel. People are very worried.
Plus, a war on information. 70 Britons arrested in the UAE for taking pictures and or videos of drone and missile attacks. They could face years behind bars. Is that life in sunny Dubai? Those stories and more after the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister is to host business and energy leaders in Downing Street later to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. Talks are expected to focus on the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, which has disrupted global oil supplies. The price of a barrel of Brent crude is currently sitting at $115 this morning. The Environment Secretary Emma Reynolds was just asked by Nick if the Chancellor is considering a temporary cut on VAT on fuel.
Well, we have frozen fuel duty twice since we came into
until
government.
When? September, isn't it?
Well, that is in place until September, but we will make decisions around that given what the situation is at the time. But we are also leading international efforts to de-escalate the conflict in the Middle East because, obviously, of the impact back home, but also the impact of people in the region.
Overnight, President Trump has warned that he could take the oil in Iran and seize its major fuel hub of Harg Island. Mr. Trump has also said that a deal could be reached soon and that peace talks are progressing well. Police are continuing to question a man after a car hit and injured seven people in Derby city centre. A 36-year-old was detained on Saturday evening on suspicion of attempted murder. The final details of the compensation scheme for drivers' missold car finance agreements will be published later. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said that nearly half of the total deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. City AM's editor-in-chief, Christian May, is following developments for LBC.
What this means is that millions of people, about 14 million such motor finance agreements were struck, could get an average of around £700. As I say, this regulatory scheme could be still subject to legal challenges by lenders and others who say it's too broad. Billions and billions of pounds, by the way, on the line. And most banks and others involved in these schemes have set aside that money.
New research suggests nearly three quarters of secondary school teachers say stress is directly damaging the quality of education. The studies found nearly three in four teachers have considered leaving the profession due to burnout. The government has promised to recruit an additional 6,500 teachers by the end of this parliament. And Tottenham Hotspur are looking for their third manager of the season following the departure over the weekend of Igor Tudor. He's left his role after only 44 days in charge in North London. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 99.67. It closed down 5 points on Friday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.16. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK through Monday. Drier with sunny spells in the south with a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Brace yourself for the stories that never let go. For dragons, football, old friends.
How you doing?
The absolute banger that saves your season.
There he is!
For the boy who lived.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Killer holidays.
These gays, they're trying to murder me.
And fresh drama on prescription.
Welcome to the pit.
HBO Max is streaming now, and it's just the beginning. Content varies by plan.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after eight, Monday, March the 30th. So time for some home truths for our police. The vast number of failings, 92% of burglaries failed to be solved. If you like, only 8% have home truths for the people who break into our homes. For the police, we'll look at that in more detail. Plus, talking about homes, let's talk about housing. That target will not be met. It was an ambitious one, 1.5 million homes. I was speaking to the Environment Secretary. She also has the Rural Affairs brief, and many homes, of course, are built in rural areas. Emma Reynolds, she told me just minutes ago...
House starts and finishes will begin to accelerate through this Parliament because of the changes that we've made.
You still think you can reach that target then, Secretary of State?
We still think we can reach it.
You'll hear from Kevvy Bain not later today, a plan to cut bills by £200 a year. More from one of her senior colleagues later in the show. Plus, time for a holiday, isn't it?
I am the spirit of possible. The spirit of Dubai.
The spirit of Dubai. Now, as many as 70 Brits have been locked up in the UAE for taking photos and videos of drone and missile attacks. They could be looking at 10 years behind bars. Is that the reality of life in the UAE?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
For The Sun, the headline is Broken in Britain. I'm saying some home truths for the cops over burglaries. Burglary has been effectively decriminalised in some parts of the United Kingdom, MPs and policing experts have said. No break-ins were solved at all in vast areas of England and Wales. This is last year. Some 92% of the nearly 200,000 illegal entry investigations which were completed by cops were closed as unsolved. I'll try and cut it down, but I've got to blitz you with a few figures. I apologise. But we're looking at 184,783 burglaries where an investigation was finished, 143,000 shut down without a suspect being identified. That's just shy of 400 a day. In another 27,500 cases, a suspect was identified but could not be prosecuted, while in 400 cases, further action was deemed to be, quotes, not in the public interest. We'll speak with journalist Charles Hymas in just a moment. Let's speak with a former chief constable. Sue Sim was chief constable of Northumbria Police and joins me now. Good to have you on. Look, you're the policing professional. I'm not even an amateur. I'm just an ordinary bloke. These are horrific to me. As a former top cop, how do you react? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and I'm absolutely with you. I think this is dreadful. Horrific is not a hard enough word for this. Police officers should be investigating burglary. Burglary is the worst thing that can happen to a person when their home is violated. And to be quite honest, the police are not doing a good enough job. The difficulty is that a great many forces around the country now do not send police officers out at the first call for a burglary. They are just trying to solve things from sitting behind a desk, which is ridiculous. In my day, when I was the Chief Constable of Northumbria, every time we had a burglary, a police officer was dispatched as an urgent case, and they had to respond within 10 minutes, and that's what should be happening now. Shabina Mahmood is wanting to do that for urgent calls. Burglary is urgent.
is there any argument that could be put forward by chief constables or indeed by a commissioner that he, she, they don't have enough troops on the ground, Sue Sim?
Absolutely not. I get so tired when I hear police forces, police chiefs, police and crime commissioners turning round and saying that they don't have sufficient resources. The issue is you use your resources properly. You have officers out in the neighbourhoods and they do the job properly. They visit homes when they're violated by burglary and they solve the crime.
You're saying everything people want to hear, and I'm sure that's what you brought in when you were Chief Constable of Northumbria Police. You left around about a decade ago. How has policing developed in the last 10 years or so, would you say, Sue?
The policing has developed because there are lots of things that are thrown in as priorities. But what you've got to say, sexual offences remain a top priority. Burglary is the next priority as far as the communities are concerned. Policing will not succeed unless we can get our communities working with us. You cannot turn around and say we just don't have sufficient resources. You make your resources work in a way that works with the community.
Sue, thank you for your time. Sue Sim was Chief Constable of Northumbria Police, saying, I think, imagine what we all want to hear. And, of course, if you've been a victim of that, do let me know. In a related story, we go to the Daily Telegraph, and it's a similar theme, I'm afraid. Mobile phone theft has been effectively decriminalised, say critics, after police data revealed fewer than 1% of offences resulted in a charge. The author of that piece is the Home Affairs editor for the Daily Telegraph, Charles Hymas, and he joins me now. Charles, good to have you on. Just give the listeners a little more detail to your piece in the Telegraph today. Morning.
Okay, good morning, Nick. Yeah, so the piece essentially looked at 17 police forces in terms of their ability to charge offences relating to the theft of phones, and only 0.82% of the crimes were led to a charge in those 17 forces in the past year. So that's more than 86,000 thefts, of which only less than 1% were solved. And something like 90% of the offences ended without a single suspect being found.
You've spoken to one of the leading political parties about this, the Lib Dems. What are they saying? What are they calling for, Charles?
They're arguing that that there should be a much tougher approach to, by the National Crime Agency setting up a special unit to track down the professional gangs which are behind lots of these thefts. And also there is a big sort of argument that the tech companies, the phone companies, could do more by essentially giving enabling phones to be essentially disabled once they've been stolen. And I think that is a big issue, because if you cut off the need or the ability to rewire a phone, then you're going to essentially kill the trade.
There's one very hot phone out there somewhere, isn't there? Morgan McSweeney's at the moment, Charles.
Yes, somewhere, probably, maybe in, there was a suggestion it may have ended up in China, who knows. It's disappeared.
Your Home Affairs editor of the Daily Telegraph, let's merge the two stories together then, the one that you've written up in today's Telegraph, the other one that I'm talking about is Broken in Britain. How do you imagine senior police officers, and indeed the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, will respond to and react to these headlines, Charles?
I think there is a change in attitude amongst the police and also within the Home Office, that these sorts of crimes have been disregarded for too long. And so there is definitely a focus. And today we've got a piece from the Chief Inspector of Police, Sir Andy Cook, who essentially says that it's not rocket science. Essentially what he's saying is that there is a recognition that police have to promptly answer the phone, attend incidents within a target time, investigate all reasonable lines of inquiry, and bring offenders to justice. And that's very simple. He says it's a basic, he says it's still work to be done, but the police do recognise this and have tried to up their game.
Lastly, I referenced Shabana Mahmood again. She took action, I think, against NCIs, non-crime hate incidents. What was the action? Has that actually come about?
Well, there's going to be a big announcement in the next 24 hours about that. And essentially, they've revoked the legislation behind non-crime hate incidents. So in essence, they have they've gone, and they're going to be replaced with what they describe as a common sense system, whereby the approach will be is that they will have that you will only investigate an incident or record an incident where it has a policing purpose, i.e. to prevent or to investigate and solve a crime.
We'll look to see how that develops over the next 24 hours. Charles Hymers, thank you. Check out his piece in the Daily Telegraph. He's Home Affairs Editor for the title 14 After 8. Aisha's in High Wycombe. This happened to you personally. When was this, Aisha? What happened? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. What happened to you?
Basically, I was burgled when I initially moved into my property about 5 to 6 years ago. And we were out, and they came through the back way. I don't think I left my door open, but they took my car keys. They drove off into Slough, crashed my car.
Oh, grief.
Crashed my car, so that was a write-off. Was carless for, until I bought my next vehicle, which was a few weeks. And then they took fingerprints, everything, the police. All I knew was it was three males. That's all I was told.
How would you rate the response of the police officers involved, Aisha?
They were good. I would give them, 8 out of 10. They were good. They came, they took a whole statement, they took all the details. They were good, but...
Did they get the people?
No.
No,
so to this day, I'm not looking over my shoulder thinking, is anyone following me?
I can understand why you feel that way, Aisha. Thank you. Look after yourself. The failure to solve a single burglary, then one-third of the country, one-third of the UK, not a single burglary has been solved. That is absolutely lamentable. And we've not even talked about the nicking of mobile phones as well. Derek, you'll be the next caller on that. Plus, what a joyous life in Dubai. Hardly. Dozens of Britons locked up. They could be looking at years in jail. David Haig, founder and managing director of Dubai Watch.
Anyone that harms the government, harms an institution, harms a leader, is liable to being jailed. 2 to 10 years in jail for a tweet.
More on that after this. 8:15 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Business and energy leaders are together for talks at Downing Street to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. Police are continuing to question a man after a car hit 7 people in Derby city centre. And millions of drivers will find out later how they can claim compensation for missold car finance. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 29 at the A127 to the QE2 bridge. It's because a car broke down earlier. All the lanes are back open now, but it's still very slow. The A127 westbound is partially blocked just before the M25 junction, and that's causing delays back to the halfway house. There are two problems on the North Circular Road. Firstly, westbound, there are delays to Onos Grove following an accident, and eastbound, it's slow to the A10, and this is Edmonton because of an accident in the 4th Street tunnel, although everything's back open now. On the trains, there are severe delays on the Mildmay line between Dalston, Kingsland and Stratford, and minor delays on the Bakerloo and Metropolitan lines.
This is LBC.
Drugs stay in your system longer than you think. So you could fail a police drug test days later.
Drug test positive.
Be banned from driving for a minimum of 12 months.
Come with me, please, sir.
And have a criminal record for years.
And turn to the side, please.
Which could cost you your job.
So sorry, we're going to have to let you go.
Is risking your future really a road you want to go down? When you let drugs drive, you lose control of your life. Think. Don't put drugs in the driving seat.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
The Paramount Plus Spring Sale is on, with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison, starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto-renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus, T's and C's apply.
Chase is the digital bank that boosts your savings to 4.5% AER variable.
A boost?
Yep. It includes a 2.25% AER boost for the first 12 months.
Are they being boosted now?
All the time. Bedtime, gym time, romantic dinner time. And soon you could boost your way to...
Beach time.
Boost your savings with Chase. Search Chase Boosted Saver. 18 plus UK residents available to new Chase current account customers for their first 31 days. 4.41% gross interest paid monthly. Eligibility and T's and C's apply.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep on going under.
Get that Toyota electric feeling with the all-new, all-electric Toyota Urban Cruiser. Available with 0% APR representative and £1,500 deposit contribution. And save £1,500 with the Toyota Electrified Saving. Visit your nearest Toyota centre.
Price from £299.95. Available on Toyota PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by 30th of June 2026. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
Just coming to you, Derek Kirkhall, in a moment. Let's pick up. I haven't done enough, if any indeed, of your social media messages are coming. Dell and Boreham Wood, maybe they should have sentences that mean something for phone theft. Alfred says, what do you expect when you loyally supported Boris Johnson's axing of the police stations? Well, you just heard from a chief constable who I think is probably closer to it than you or than I, that they have got the resources. And let's be honest about it. I don't know about you and whether you do much driving, Alfred, but you can be going along and suddenly you will see three or four police cars converge on a scene and there's like a dozen officers there. All running, well, not running, taking notes or something. They've got the officers when they want to, let's be honest. Derek in Northallerton, what's the point you want to make, Derek? Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hello.
Morning, Nick. Yep. These figures are actually horrendous, but when you, next you throw into the mix shoplifting...
Oh, God, yeah,
and the figures absolutely go through the roof. Shoplifters got a licence to steal. They do not charge them if they pinch goods up less than £200.
Well, the Home Secretary has told us that's gone now. That's been, she says that has been removed.
Well, I doubt it. The shops give them a slap on the wrist and ban them from the shops, but they just walk back in.
I'm afraid they do, yes.
But the only thing I agree with Tony Blair, three strikes and you're out.
Yes, tell me what you mean by that.
You're caught first time, you might get a slap on the wrist. You're caught second time, you go to court and you get sentenced.
Yep.
You're caught the third time, you throw the key away. Mm. Simple as that. I and most man and woman walking the street couldn't give a damn whether there's one, two, three, four, five in a cell. They've done the crime, they do the time.
Derek, thank you for that. We'll take more calls on that in a moment. In the first hour, we talked about those energy bills and the prices. Jeff in Essex asks, how is the price of petrol arrived at? Are we paying VAT on excise duty? All the price cuts and help our government are presumably funded by borrowing, and our high rates of taxation having to pay for the interest on our borrowing. I despair. Jeff, as and when you put a litre of unleaded or a litre of diesel in, be aware more than half will go to the government, either in excise duty or with the VAT as well. You need to be aware of that. Same subject, you're all telling me about how angry you are about the increase in cost of petrol here. This is from Terry in Bow in East London. I use one in South East London near Blackheath, unleaded, £1.70 a litre. I'm afraid those are the prices you are paying, which means it's time to go back to my fuel trackers.
Nick Ferrari's Fuel Tracker on LBC.
There we are, Gasolina playing, as we've already done London and we've done Scotland, so let's go up to the northeast, my friend Mohammed. Now, when we started this exactly 20 days ago, you could get a litre, let's take the point nines off, it just makes it confusing, they all end point nine, so you could get a litre of unleaded at 131, diesel 133. When we spoke a week ago, they'd gone to 146 and 176. Mohammed joins me now. Morning, Mohammed. What are we
Good
looking
morning.
At? Morning, sir. What are we looking at this morning?
Well, from Newcastle, I've just been to the garage, Nick, and it's for unleaded 156.
Whoa, that's gone up 10p.
And diesel, my friend, 186.9.
186, that's another 10p increase. Safe driving, Mohammed. We'll talk again probably next week because they have a shortened week due to Easter. So since we started, that is an increase of 25p for unleaded and 53p for diesel in 20 days. Can it get worse? We're about to find out. Mark in Plymouth. Mark, another of my fuel trackers. When we started this exercise, you were coming in at 133 for unleaded, 140 diesel. When we last spoke a week ago, you were 144 unleaded, 166 diesel. My friend, where do we find you now? Good morning.
Oh, hiya. It's, petrol's 148.9 or nearly £1.49.
Yeah.
And diesel is 172.9.
Safe driving down in the southwest. So that's gone up. Actually, that's not as bad. 11p in the southwest for the Dura. I'm so sorry. When I talk about 15p, 15p, I'm so sorry. And 32p. for diesel. We'll get those fuel trackers. Thanks, lads. We'll get the fuel trackers out again probably next week when we actually get round to it. Now, we will come back to the conversation we're having about crime and the extraordinary amount of unsolved crime. Phone theft, we heard from the journalist, 1%. Burglaries, 92% unsolved. All right, look at it the other way, 8% solved. Pretty woeful. In a third of Great Britain, not a single burglary is solved. Not a single one. They're being written off at more than getting on for 400 a day. Now, somewhere where they take a rather different approach to crime is the United Arab Emirates. And as many as 70 Britons could have been locked up in there for taking photographs and videos of drone and missile attacks. You might have seen this in one of your newspapers yesterday, The Mail on Sunday. Tourists, cabin crew have been detained in police cells and prisons, in some cases denied sleep, food or even medicine. Well, let's speak again with David Haig. Now, he's founder and managing director of Dubai Watch. We spoke a couple of weeks ago. It's a UK-based human rights watchdog. Good to have you on again, Mr. Haig. Just a little bit more background and detail on the story we're discussing. What more do we know about these unfortunate individuals? Morning to you.
Morning. Good morning. I wrote an article, I think, a couple of weeks ago for the Mail, expressing my concern when I saw influencers, Brits, holidaymakers, posting pictures online of the attacks in Dubai, which of course make Dubai look a very unsafe place to go on holiday or to open a business. And so I saw a problem coming. And, it's only taken a few days for that problem to come, but Brits are detained there at the moment for taking pictures. And not just for taking pictures, what is, I think, quite concerning what's happened. So say, for instance, if a missile or a missile interception debris hits a building, the police have been going into the building and going into the apartments and people around, knocking on their doors, demanding their phones. And if they've got pictures of the attacks, arresting them just for having a picture of an attack on your phone, not even spreading it because they need to investigate. So you've now got on a normal day, the police system there, the courts, they're very chaotic. They're very overwhelmed. You can imagine now in a country with effectively bombs or interceptions of bombs dropping and massive numbers of not just Brits, but other nationalities being arrested for what they call cybercrime.
And I would imagine if you decline to hand over your mobile phone, even if you've just taken photographs for your own personal use, you're going to get nicked as well.
Yeah, you have no choice. It's not. Please give it to us. It's they take it, and even whether or not they've got basically technology that can get into the phones, whether or not you give them the password. Oh, really? So they just take the phones.
And what happens then? You're taken to a police cell, are you, and questioned? And what is the form normally, David?
So the normal process is that the police would take, there's different types of police. There's one CID, let's call them, is kind of plain clothes. And then you have the ones in the clothes. You're taken to a police station or what's called CID HQ. You're investigated. That is extremely chaotic. Don't think some kind of very calm British police station where there's a few drunk people. It is absolute chaos. People speaking, obviously, in Arabic, lots of shouting, very hot, and lots of guns around. Things that Brits won't be used to when they go to a police station here. And the thing is as well, you've got a country that's in chaos. So on a normal time, you wouldn't expect much chaos. But this, you've got a country literally with bombs dropping on it in a situation where you've got lots of people taking pictures, influencers, they can't keep control of it. It's utter chaos is what I'm hearing. And because of the overcrowding of jails on a normal day, which is obscene. So imagine you've got a cell that's perhaps built for 20. It's normal without what's happening now to have 80 in that. So you can imagine what it's like now. And I think they're in a very difficult situation. What do they do? Do they charge these people as per their law and arrest them and put them through the courts and give them sentences of up to 2 or 10 years? Do they genuinely do that? Or do they have some form of system where they just find them and let them go because of the numbers? They've got a really difficult choice to make. And I think, the Foreign Office is in a real mess as well, because they simply don't have the resources, again, on a normal day, to look after the Brits that are in jail and getting in problems with fights in bars on beaches. What are they doing now? I don't see how. That's one of my big worries, how the Foreign Office can cope with this. They don't have the resources.
Do the authorities not realise they're actually making matters worse by acting in this fashion, or they're the sort of folk who simply won't care, they'll just continue doing it that way?
Well, that's the problem, you see. I mean, you know, if I were advising them, I would say to them, just give all of these people a 100 dirham fine, which is, you know, £20 fine, and let them go. The problem is if they do that, they lose control of effectively, Dubai is effectively corporation Dubai. So they need to maintain the image. They can't, and obviously now, if you're a family sitting in Wales looking at where you're going to go for your winter sun, you're not going to go to Dubai if you're sensible, with literally bombs dropping and airlines suspending flights and then restarting them. So it's damaged the brand. It's damaged the brand for tourists. It's damaged the brand for expats. So they've got to keep control of that. So they're in a really sticky situation. Do they genuinely give some people, you know, 5-10 year sentences and actually lock them up for taking a picture, or do they slap them on the wrist and let them go? But if they do that, then how's that controlling their censorship? So they've got a real problem.
David, stay in touch. Thank you. David Haig, founder and managing director of Dubai Watch, UK-based human rights watchdog. 8:29. We'll go a minute late to news. David's in Rainham to talk about unsolved crime. I think this is motor crime in your case, is it? David, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, it's about my car, you know?
Yep. Tell me what happened, sir.
In the first instant, they came home and they nicked Range Rover, right from the driveway that went.
Yes.
We thought that was all. And then January last year, they just came in. And they broke through the door, they came inside the house, looked around the house, and then picked up the key to the Audi car, and they just literally drove off. And it was all recorded on CCTV, but nothing has been done about it up to this present day.
Sorry, so you've got photographs, you've got images of the people breaking into your house, have you?
Yes, indeed. We've got the CCTV. We've got all of them recorded. And
are they wearing masks or balaclavas or hoods or whatever it might be?
One of them was wearing, I mean, they wore the balaclava, but you can still see their faces.
And, are you in Met area or Essex?
I'm in Essex.
Yes. What has the response from Essex police been?
Well, they only came around and, you know, apologised for the inconvenience and then do their usual, they dust the place, they look for fingerprint, they couldn't find anything. And that was it, really. And they gave me the crime reference number.
Have they taken your video footage?
Yes, they came to have a look at the video footage. They took it.
Oh, they took it. But they've taken no action with that video footage?
Nothing has happened to this present date.
And when did it happen lastly, David?
The last one, I mean, the audio was taken January last year.
January of last year, and the Range Rover went before that. David, thank you. We'll take more calls on that. Coming up later in this hour, the Conservatives announced plans to drill in the North Sea and to cut your fuels by £200, but will they work? Plus... they can't, it would appear, as that target of 1.5 million homes is woefully missed. We'll have more immediately after the news. 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
The Environment Secretary has told Nick the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. Emma Reynolds has told LBC the Chancellor is keeping a close eye on rising oil prices due to the war in Iran. Separately, Keir Starmer is to host business leaders in Downing Street later to discuss the economic impact of the conflict. Number 10 says the aim is to hear directly from firms and discuss how ministers and private sector can work together. And the final details of the compensation scheme for drivers missed sold car finance agreements will be published later. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said 14 million deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Tony, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Scott has called from Glasgow. Hi, Scott.
Jane's in Camden first. Hi, Jane.
Households will benefit from £150 off of their energy bills with a price cap, giving households certainty on their bills until July.
Hear every side of the story.
You feel like passing much of a luxury now to heat house. Dharma is going to have to get involved.
I'm at the petrol station and it's just cost me nearly £100 to fill up half.
I'm almost in my 40s and I haven't ever had a break in war. In any of these living costs.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC, leading Britain's conversation.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears?
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
When the business hustle is on, when the boardroom drama hots up, when sales pitches really deliver results, or don't. All that, and they made £3.
£3 and 13 pence.
Oh yeah, that'll save them.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And the TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels so you can keep up with all the latest boardroom battles. Search TV licence together.
Go from someday to sunny days in Greece with package holidays from £329 per person. So stop dreaming of souvlaki. Stop scrolling crystal clear beaches. Search EasyJet Holidays and get your holiday in Greece sorted today. Get out there. Selected dates April to September. Limited availability. Adult protected. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We touched on this at the first hour. If you were listening, 8:34 is the time. This is the idea of Labour's. And always said it was very ambitious, this idea that they were going to build 1.5 million homes in the lifetime of that parliament. I'm going to give you some numbers for what the Conservatives achieved. By the way, they didn't get there either, but they possibly, well, rather more wisely, didn't claim that they would. This, as a report comes out today, which you'll have heard if you were listening in the first hour, report comes out today in which they say they're going to come in probably around 400,000 fewer than they'd hoped to build. That's missed by quite a target, isn't it? This is an assessment by Ministry of Housing officials revealing the government how far they think they will fall short. There's already reports to the Times, there's already a blame game going on between ministers, councils and the house building industry. Well, let's stay with the politicians. And I've asked the Secretary of State for Housing, Steve Reid, and his colleague, Housing Minister Matthew Pennycook, multiple times over the past 6 months whether the government will hit this target, not least because a couple of sources within the housing industry told me it was never, ever, ever going to happen. So, in form with that, I decided to ask them, will they hit that target? And here's a little of the repeated assurances I've received. You have this extraordinary target of 1.5 million homes by the lifetime of this parliament. Yeah. What number are we at currently, Secretary of State?
About 240,000 this year, 29% increase in starts over a year ago. So we are starting to see movement, but it's not enough. So, you know, we're changing the law, as I said. That's not the end of the job.
Yeah. How many new homes have been built since Labour came to power last year?
It's about 231,000 so far. But if you look at
starts, you're not going to hit your target of 1.5.
Well, we are, because it takes some time between putting in an application, getting planning consent, and then getting spades in the ground and having the home, you're not going to see them yet.
If I'm still alive at the end of this term of Parliament, do you want a 100-quid bet and the money to go to a homeless charity shelter in Streatham and Croydon North? I don't think you're going to get it, and I'd happily put 100 quid towards your charity. You're going to put 100 quid bet with me?
If I'm still in post, Nick, and I hope I am.
I'll still alive, Mr. Reid.
I mean, I hope I don't get this from too many journalists, otherwise I'm going to potentially be out of pocket.
No, you can say... Hang on, you wouldn't be out of pocket, would you, Mr. Reid?
Potentially. But
come on, how are we getting on with trying to hit 1.5 million homes? That is a heck of a task. You're like the Manchester United manager. You've been saddled with quite a task here, Mr. Reid.
More like Arsenal at the moment, I hope, Nick. But I mean, you're not going to see the numbers now. I know the numbers are low. It's about 2,300, I think, in over the last year, which is too low. But it takes time for the changes we're making to work through, because the developer has to put in an application, the council has to approve it, then you get spades in the ground. So you are going to see the increase further on in the Parliament.
You had a very ambitious promise, 1.5 million homes. I know I won't need to remind you of that number.
Yep.
How are we looking, Minister?
We are, as expected, low numbers of housing completions in the early years of Parliament. We've had this discussion before, Nick. You know it's a stretching target. These things don't turn around overnight. And the 1.5 always involved a very steep increase in house building rates in the final years of the Parliament.
You're sticking to that pledge. You don't want to revise or review it then, Mr. Pennycook?
We're not going to revise it because we need an ambitious target, Nick, to galvanise industry, but also because the scale of the housing crisis is such that I think it would be irresponsible of us to bring forward a less ambitious target.
You heard we speaking with Steve Reid, the Housing Secretary, in October, twice in November, and the Housing Minister, Matthew Pennycook, as recently as last week. Now, as recently as the previous hour of the show, I spoke with Environment Secretary Emma Reynolds, and I asked her, are you going to hit the target?
Well, look, we have made some of the most radical changes to planning for generations. Obviously, those changes come are coming through now. The house starts and finishes will begin to accelerate through this parliament because of the changes that we've made, and we are still committed to 1.5 million homes.
You'll say you still think you can reach that target then, Secretary of State?
We still think we can reach it, and we've already put through planning changes so that we can get there, but obviously as they come through, the numbers will start to accelerate as we get through further into this parliament.
Are you buying it? Just to give you some reference, so the last 5 years of the previous administration, the number of homes that were built were 900,095. The best year in recent years was 2019, pre-COVID, which obviously had a devastating impact, of course. That came in at 248,000. So even if the government, the new government, or this government, had gone with the best figure in recent years, 248, and multiplied it by five, they were still a hostage to fortune to hit that 1.5 million. Now we know it's going to come in, and these are their own figures, currently 400,000 fewer. Why? Steve Turner, Executive Director of the Home Builders Federation, joins me now. Let's accept it was always ambitious, but what of the argument from the government that the necessary legislation and steps have been put in place so now suddenly the numbers will take off like a rocket? True or false? Mr. Turner, good morning.
Good morning. We're most certainly not seeing that yet. I think we can suggest numbers that are at best flatlining. And there's a number of... Steve Reid appeared at our conference last week.
Oh,
and he heard the frustrations of members. He heard why it's not going
come and
up.
Share them. Some of my listeners would have been, but I wasn't, sir. What are those frustrations?
So we've seen over recent years by successive governments a whole host of new policy costs and taxes added on to development. And ultimately that is meaning now that many sites are just simply not viable. We saw last week the Future Home Standard announced, incredibly challenging. You know, all new homes need heat pumps and 40% solar panels on the roof. All have their merits, all these new policies, biodiversity net gain. We saw a landfill tax coming in the budget. We've got a building safety levy expected to add £3,000 per house coming up in the autumn. And this is on top of the contributions developers or sites have to make towards affordable housing, towards infrastructure and amenities. And when you add up all these costs, you add up the cost of the land and you add up how much it's costing you to build the house, which also is going up because of Ukraine, potentially now because of Iran, it's simply not viable to build homes because you can't sell them for more than what all those costs add up to. So government's got to look at how we've got into a position where you've got all of these very expensive policy costs, all of these taxes that they're taking out of development have got to the point they're preventing development happening.
I don't know if you've had sight of a report by the Centre for Cities think tank. It says if Britain had kept pace with Western European house building between 1955 and 2015, we'd have had another 4.3 million homes built. That's how, and so that's 60 years. That's how far we've fallen in 60 years, Steve.
Absolutely. We've been massively under-delivering on housing for decades. What this government quite rightly have come in and identified is that we've got to change that.
Yes.
They've made some really positive changes on planning. But planning is not the only issue with regard to house building.
I mean, have we got the brickies? Have we got the sparks? Have we got the chippies, whatever they're all called? Have we got them all?
We've currently got the trades to build 200,000 homes a year, which is what we're doing. Now, as the Minister's quite rightly said in their interviews, it takes time to gear up and to increase that number. And over that time, that there are processes in place to allow us to recruit and train more people. That will be a challenge, but at the minute, that's not most certainly not the reason we're not building the homes. It's down to the viability and affordability as well. You know, the other problem is, ultimately, builders can only build if buyers can buy. Mm. And at the minute, young people in particular just can't access affordable mortgage lending.
Lastly, writing in the Times in 2024, Sir Keir Starmer laid down the gauntlet, said what his government, if they were in power, would do. And he ended, "I expect the public to hold us accountable to these milestones." the judgment at the moment is they've missed and missed by a country mile, isn't it, Steve?
It's going to be massively challenging, as you quite rightly pointed out. They're missing by about 100,000 or a third of the number required each year. So in the latter years of the Parliament, that's going to require a huge increase, which currently we're just not seeing happening.
I sense we'll talk again. Steve Turner, you're Executive Director of the Home Builders Federation. If you're in the home building game, if you're trying to, of course, trying to raise money to do a development, do give me a call. Let's talk a little bit about Dubai. Albertina, coming to you about crime in a moment. And I'm surprised by the reaction of some of you. John in Wales, stop feeling sorry for these idiotic Brits in Dubai. When will Brits learn to respect the laws in other countries? Les in Buckinghamshire, if you go to these countries, you abide by their rules. When you're in the same room as a bear, you don't poke it with a stick. Jonathan in Deal, the UAE is a place where people might be maimed or even executed for crimes that would carry a prison sentence in the UK. Don't expect kind treatment for breaking their laws. Listen, if these all these people have done, in some instances, is when their apartment block's been hit by a rocket, they've taken a photograph. Are you honestly telling me, and God forbid that was to happen in the UK, or let's just say for the purpose of debate, a lorry now ploughs into your front garden, whatever it might be. It's human nature. You're going to take a photograph. If these Brits, as some of you describe, these Brits who aren't respecting local laws, running international spy networks, I could understand it. And even, although I don't hold with it, but if they were suddenly to start, I don't know, influencer channel, say, the truth of Dubai, again, I wouldn't back it, but I could understand that. All they've done is take a photograph for their own personal use. They've not sent it to friends or family back in the UK. They've not used it on an influencer site. And they've still been nicked. If you call that obeying local laws, no, that's censorship. It's for their own personal use. Those folk, I think, need to have a rethink about that. Albertina, we'll talk crime in a minute. Let's do it after the news. We're also going to be talking a way of getting your energy bills down. Well, this was Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch. She had a plan yesterday.
What the government needs to do is start drilling our own oil and gas in the North Sea. I don't want to be in a situation where people are panic buying fuel. People are very worried.
Of course, there are reports that the head of one supermarket says there is panic buying going on at his pumps. We'll talk about more of that in a few moments. It is 8:45. LBC News headlines are read by Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. Business and energy leaders are due to gather for talks at Downing Street to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. And millions of drivers will find out today how they can claim compensation for missold car finance. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise onto the QE2 bridge. It was after a car broke down earlier. All the lanes are open now, but it's still slow all the way back to junction 29 at the A127. And then on the A127, it remains very slow westbound to the M25 junction after an accident. So on the North Circular Road, westbound to Bowes Road on Osgrove, and that's following an accident. And in West London, the A40 remains closed both ways between the Marylebone Flyover and the Northern Roundabout for the ongoing works. Very busy on the approach and also on the M4 and the A4. Now, these problems on the trains do continue. The Mild May line is running with severe delays between Dalston, Kingsland and Stratford.
LBC.
Gathering round the table with family gives you a warm feeling inside. But if that warm feeling is heartburn or indigestion, it could make family meals less fun. Don't let it spoil your day. Think Gaviscon Double Action. It gets to work in seconds and lasts for up to 4 hours of relief, so you can get back to enjoying quality time with the family. For heartburn and indigestion, think Gaviscon. Gaviscon Double Action chewable tablets and oral suspension for heartburn and indigestion. Always read the label.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
Imagine you. You in a nice comfy seat with your hands behind your head, taking in the views instead of taking on the road, maybe even taking a nap. That's the bliss of getting where you need to go without worrying about driving. Book your train journey via avantiwestcoast.co.uk and we'll take you there. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:49, 11 minutes before 9. Time to pick up on some of your front pages this morning. In a moment or two, we'll be speaking the front page of the Daily Express. Kemi Bade, not my plan, will cut bills by £200 a year. More from her senior colleague Claire Coutinho on that. But we are talking about the Sun's front page, Broken in Britain, as they're calling it, or I'm saying home truths for our police. They failed to solve 92% of burglaries in the United Kingdom last year. A third of the country, not one burglary solved. Just think on that for a moment. Just think of a picture, a map of the UK in your mind. It's a fairly easy one, isn't it? A third of it, not one burglary solved. Albertina is in Greenford. You've been hanging on the line. I'm sorry it's taken me a while to get you. The story, or the point you want to make, Albertina. Good morning to you.
Hello. You seem to think that there are enough police officers.
Yes.
I have attended something called a ward panel occasionally in our area. It's every 3 months or so. Mm-hmm. And you get a face-to-face meeting with a couple of police officers and maybe a local ward councillor. And the message is that there aren't enough police officers.
Nonsense.
Well, I can tell you, you know...
Well, I did speak with the former chief constable of Northumbria, and she said that's a nonsensical argument. She said there are enough officers. They're just not being deployed in the right way. And I hope it never happens, Albertina, but if ever you're driving along and you see there's a major road incident or an incident, the police turn up. There'll be a dozen within a fairly short order. They're there when they want to be there, Albertina.
Well, if that's where it's deployed, if it's down to being where they're deployed,
yes,
I can understand that that's
yes,
the problem.
I'm
but
with
the
you
fact
there.
Is, but the fact is, when you have a face-to-face meeting with someone who is so stressed because of persistent small local problem, and these police officers, you get very stressed residents face-to-face with very stressed police officers who more or less have to leave. They have to leave because they have to go back to policing. This is a weekday evening meeting, occasional weekday evening, and they have to go off and do their job.
I don't know whether you've ever seen the stops they do sometimes, mostly for commercial vehicles, to see whether they're operating with what's called red diesel or whether they've got license insurance. Albertina, there will be 8 or 10 of them there.
Well, that's great. But it's not great
because although I'm not for one moment defending anyone who drives with bald tyres or no insurance, of course I'm not, there has to be perspective. I'm sure they want to say they want more police officers. I'd love to say I want more staff on the production team, but you work with what you're given, Albertina. That's the reality.
I would also point out that I think some of these issues should be actually handled by council enforcement officers. They're not really police. It's that blurry line between council and police. And that's part of the problem. But I can honestly tell you that it's grim sitting in some of these meetings sometimes, watching them try to sort of be the kind of like soak up this sort of bombardment of criticism because they haven't turned up to this, that, or the other. I understand, but what are they doing? I can see both sides.
If they're not solving burglaries, what are they doing all day?
Well, I mean, I can honestly tell you from the what I've seen in personal observation, I have absolutely no doubt that you're right and that some of these kind of tasks are distributed in a way that we cannot perceive as kind of being useful. But I can honestly tell you from my own personal experience and observation that these guys are working as hard as they can, and they're relying on PCSOs. We were extremely lucky in Greenford to have an exceptional PCSO. He won awards, but he had to retire through illness. We need more police officers, especially referring to your other subject you're discussing, which is developments. You're going to have huge developments and huge concentrations of people in areas. You're going to have to start recruiting police officers now.
Albertina, I have enjoyed our conversation. Well done for being so involved with your local ward. It's tremendous that folk do that and the efforts that you put in. And I do hope that they can manage to find perhaps officers more time to be where you need them most. Right, let's talk about other matters and get ready for later this week. You are going to be hit with a raft of inflation-busting charges. I discussed some of them with the government Secretary of State in the first hour. Get ready to have council tax increased by maybe 5%, water bills up, car tax up, mobile phone bills up, TV licence up, up and up, up, up and away, unfortunately. But the Conservatives have a plan to at least address some of that. Here with more details, Shadow Energy Secretary and Shadow Minister for Equalities, Claire Coutinho, who joins me now. So your boss is going to be oil at sea later today. Kemi Badenoch is going to an oil rig. Why is she going there? What's she going to announce? Good morning to you.
good morning. And yes, I'm looking forward to seeing the pictures of that. But we've got a very clear plan, which is that we should be cutting costs of people's bills. We know people are struggling with energy bills. We know the war in Iran is going to make that worse. And so we've got a plan which doesn't come to taxpayers. It doesn't cost taxpayers a penny, but it would save the average household around £200 off their energy bills for the next 3 years. And one of the other things we should be doing is just being realistic about our energy security, using our common sense and making the most of the North Sea. If we drill in the North Sea, there is £25 billion of tax revenue that we could get over the next 10 years, and we could be using those funds to help people with things like their bills.
But £200 is obviously very useful, but with the pressures with the Strait of Hormuz, the pressures of Ukraine, isn't that likely just to be wiped out by international events? Claire Coutinho.
But we have to help people where we can. And what you're seeing at the moment from Labour is they've got a plan which is going to go back to taxpayers. All of the people that you're talking about on £30,000, £40,000, £50,000 are going to be asked to pay more in tax to help pay for a bailout for people on welfare. We think that is the wrong approach, and instead of doing that, we should be taking out some of the taxes and levies that the government is choosing to impose on people's energy bills. That would at least provide some relief for people in what we know is going to be a difficult time.
Is there any true figure for the amount of oil that we might be fortunate to have in the North Sea? What are the expectations it could yield?
Well, there is parts of the North Sea which are unexplored, but so we don't know exactly what the full picture is. But like I said, the independent analysis is if you look at all the oil and gas we could be drilling over the next 10 years, that's £25 billion of tax revenue. You've got two particular fields at the moment, Rosebank and Jackdaw, which are sat on the Secretary of State's desk. For what reason? I don't know. We're in an energy crisis. He should just be signing those off. One of those fields alone, Jackdaw, could be 5% of the UK's gas supply. So you can see the scale of what we could be doing if we just backed our own resources in this country.
You reference Ed Miliband. He would say to you, and I'm sure you've had this conversation many times in the House of Commons and elsewhere, that the future is not to go for drilling. The future is to be with wind and to be with solar power, and that creates hundreds if not thousands of jobs and ends our dependency on fossil fuels. You'll have a view.
So let me tell you this. Drilling in the North Sea does not stop you building a wind farm. It does not stop anyone from buying an electric car. They are trying to put these two issues together when they're completely separate. We know that we are going to need oil and gas. Even the Climate Change Committee says we are going to need oil and gas in 2050. If we are going to need it, where do you want to get it from? I would rather get it from here because you get the jobs and the tax revenue benefits. Labour would rather get it from Norway or from foreign countries with gas which has much higher emissions. So this is about being sensible. If we're going to need it, we should use our own.
And to the argument, but we can't use our own because we'd be forced to sell it on international markets, is another argument Mr. Miliband puts to me.
Well, again, this is just peddling myths. All of the gas that is drilled in the North Sea is used in Britain. It makes up about 50% of our gas supply. Now, rather than use that gas supply, what Ed Miliband wants to do is increase our reliance on foreign imports of LNG. Higher emission, much worse for our energy security, and giving up all of that tax revenue, which, as I've said, could be used to help people with their bills.
Realistically, and I know you're a woman who likes detail, realistically, how soon would these new rigs come online?
So Jackdaw and Rosebank, those two fields I talked about, about, they could be up and running in time for this winter. And outside of that, if you've got an approach to the North Sea, which is supporting the industry, you could be getting billions more in tax revenue within 5 years. This is enormous stuff. Rather than go back to taxpayers for that money, I would rather get it from a thriving industry instead.
You're probably aware the Prime Minister is calling a summit at Number 10 later today with energy companies and I think fuel suppliers as well. This is as there are concerns, I stress concerns, of shortages in fuel. I don't want to cause panic buying, there are, but anyway, there are concerns. What should the message be put out by the government? What should he be telling those relevant bosses later today?
Well, look, the government will be looking at contingency plans. When I was in government, I had very detailed information on fuel supplies. I don't have that in opposition. But the point that I will make, Nick, is last year we lost a third of our refineries in Britain because of these crippling carbon taxes that the government is choosing to impose. So again, this comes back to our reliance on imports. We should be making the most of our own refineries, not driving them out of business. We should be making the most of the North Sea rather than increasing our imports of foreign gas. We should be making the most of what we could produce in Britain, and that's the most important thing for our energy security.
Finally and briefly, as I always say, you can only spend a pound once. Isn't the argument you should be spending it to the future, towards solar and towards wind power, rather than investing in something that it might be rather old source of power?
Well, that's not spending money, it's generating money for the country. And like I said, one doesn't stop t'other. So you can use the oil and gas in the North Sea. You can also build solar or wind or nuclear, which I think is actually the best way to get yourself off a reliance on gas and oil. You can do both. And if you don't, the option is clear. You can either use our own resources in the North Sea, or you can import more from Norway, you can import more from Qatar, you can import more from the US, lose the tax revenue, lose the jobs. This is just madness. We should make the most of what we've got on our own doorstep.
Enjoyed our time together. Thank you, Claire Coutinho, your Shadow Energy Secretary, Shadow Minister for Equalities, telling us that. And we will come straight to that after the news and pick up on that idea. We'll come back to it. I've said it many times before. Drill, baby, drill. Are you in support of that? Plus, mobility scooters could be allowed to reach speeds of up to 20 miles an hour. Seeing that some of these individuals obviously have mobility issues and perhaps even sight issues, do you want them going at 20 miles an hour? Plus, Jonathan Hall, KC, the UK's independent reviewer of terrorism, speaking about Tony Blair's view of an unholy alliance on the left.
I don't think that they are going to become less anti-Semitic. I think they will make those they are in bed with more anti-Semitic. So I agree with him, and I think it's worth calling out. But secondly, I think even more important is doing something about it.
Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock. The Environment Secretary has told LBC the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. The price of Brent crude has risen sharply due to the Iran war in recent weeks and is currently sitting at $115 a barrel. The government has announced that it plans to help those who need it most if energy bills spiral. But speaking to Nick this morning, Emma Reynolds was asked why the UK hasn't already followed other countries in cutting VAT on petrol and diesel.
Look, the Chancellor keeps these things under review. You'll have heard that she made a statement last week in Parliament. We are meeting as a government through COBRA and continue to meet to discuss how we can help people. We're keeping a very close eye on the situation. Energy supplies remain stable, but you're right, some of the prices are up.
Sir Keir Starmer is meeting business leaders at Downing Street to discuss the economic impact of the Iran war. Talks are expected to focus on Tehran's blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. Overnight, President Trump warned that the US could seize Iran's major fuel hub of Kharg Island. But he also told reporters on Air Force One that a peace deal could be reached soon.
We've had regime change, if you look, already, because the one regime was decimated, the next regime is mostly dead, and the third regime, we're dealing with different people than anybody's dealt with before. It's a whole different group of people. So I would consider that regime change, and frankly, they've been very reasonable.
Police are continuing to question a man after a car hit and injured seven people in Derby city centre. A 36-year-old was detained on Saturday night on suspicion of attempted murder. Counter-terror police are assisting with investigations, but Derbyshire police say there's no wider risk to the public. Millions of drivers will find out today how they can claim compensation for missold car finance. The financial regulator is due to publish its final decision, detailing the payout programme for 14 million agreements. And a leading property website says global uncertainty linked to the Iran war appears to have weakened home buyer demand in the UK. Zoopla says the number of agreed sales this month is down by 2% annually, while inquiries in March were also down 13% than a year ago. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 7 points at 9,976. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather. Scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south. A high today of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine, Monday, March the 30th. The whole idea of the North Sea will be put into sharp focus later today when Kemi Badenoch is oil at sea on an oil rig off Aberdeen. Talking about £200 annual bills could be cut. Talking about £73, how much the Labour have put the prices up are her claims. But what about the idea of tapping into the North Sea? In other news, how mobility scooters currently have their speed restrictions set could be allowed to travel at 20 miles an hour. How safe or otherwise might that be? And that very powerful piece published in the United Kingdom yesterday from Sir Tony Blair. Tony Blair as the Prime Minister. He's worried about an unholy alliance. His words, not mine. An unholy alliance. Elements of the left. Of course, he was a long-serving Labour Prime Minister. And also in some way being seen to fuel anti-Semitism. Reaction from Dr. Wajid Akhtar, Secretary General of the Muslim Council of Great Britain, who told LBC yesterday...
Honestly, I can't hear what Tony Blair has to say over the dying sounds of a million Iraqis. I think anything he has to say should be filed in the dustbin of history.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I said it before, so I'll say it again. It's going to be pretty ugly in a couple of days. From Wednesday, the raft of inflation-busting charges will put more pressure on households and businesses. Council tax up by at least 5%. Water bills up, car taxes up, mobile phone up, broadband costs up, TV licence up, on goes. It's going to be an ugly April, I'm afraid. And I do not even mention the pressure at the pumps. We had our fuel trackers in place. We went around London, Scotland, the southwest and the northeast, and it's up, up, up for unleaded and for diesel. So what about the idea that some form of financial salvation could be there, lying under the waves of the North Sea? Just how much oil or other resources might there be? Now, it has to be Ed Miliband, Ed Miliband, he must have something over Sir Keir Starmer, because even when Sir Keir was asked last week in the House of Commons a possibility of drilling, he said he didn't have the powers. It's the quasi judicial power lay with the environment secretary or energy security secretary. But you're the prime minister. It's extraordinary, this hold. But what about the case for drilling? You're going to hear a lot from Kemi Badenoch later today, but in the last 10 minutes or so, you heard from her senior colleague, Shadow Energy Secretary Claire Coutinho.
There is parts of the North Sea which are unexplored, but so we don't know exactly what the full picture is. But like I said, the independent analysis is, if you look at all the oil and gas we could be drilling over the next 10 years, that's £25 billion of tax revenue. You've got two particular fields at the moment, Rosebank and Jackdaw, which are sat on the Secretary of State's desk. For what reason, I don't know. We're in an energy crisis. He should just be signing those off. One of those fields alone, Jackdaw, could be 5% of the UK's gas supply. supply. So you can see the scale of what we could be doing if we just backed our own resources in this country.
You reference Ed Miliband. He would say to you, and I'm sure you've had this conversation many times in the House of Commons and elsewhere, that the future is not to go for drilling. The future is to be with wind and to be with solar power, and that creates hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs and ends our dependency on fossil fuels. You'll have a view.
Let me tell you this. Drilling in the North Sea does not stop you building a wind farm. It does not stop anyone from buying an electric car. They are trying to put these two issues together when they're completely separate. We know that we are going to need oil and gas. Even the Climate Change Committee says we are going to need oil and gas in 2050. If we are going to need it, where do you want to get it from? I would rather get it from here because you get the jobs and the tax revenue benefits. They would rather get it, Labour would rather get it from Norway or from foreign countries with gas which has much higher emissions. So this is about being sensible. If we're going to need it, we should use our own.
And to the argument, but we can't use our own because we'd be forced to sell it on international markets, is another argument Mr. Miliband puts to me.
Well, again, this is just peddling myths. All of the gas that is drilled in the North Sea is used in Britain. It makes up about 50% of our gas supply. Now, rather than use that gas supply, what Ed Miliband wants to do is increase our reliance on foreign imports of LNG. Higher emission, much worse for our energy security, and giving up all of that tax revenue, which, as I've said, could be used to help people with their bills.
Claire Coutinho. Let's put some of those points to Henry Hill, who's a journalist and commentator, was deputy editor of Conservative Home. And on that point, what level of backing within the Conservative rank and file would there be for this particular stance, do you think, Henry? Good morning.
Good morning. Amongst the rank and file, I can't see any objection whatsoever. I mean, there might be a small rump of a particular source of green Tory, but in the days of a shrunken Tory membership, I'm not sure how many people of that persuasion are still in the party. But I think most members, even those who do take climate change and net zero, who support net zero and take climate change seriously, would agree with Claire Coutinho. There is nothing to stop the simultaneous development of green energy and the exploitation of existing fuel resources.
Allowing that many people vote with their wallets or their purses, are there votes in this, Henry?
So there are two parts to the Conservatives' energy proposal. One will cut bills immediately, and that is Kemi Badenoch's proposal to scrap VAT on energy bills. That is the one that people will notice. Now, long-term development of the North Sea oil fields does not do this in the short term, partly because we sell on the international market, partly because these fields take a long time to build out. But what they do is provide energy security. And you'll note that today, Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, is calling on other countries not to start engaging in energy protectionism. And this is a real risk for us, because Ed Miliband, you said earlier, Ed Miliband says we'll be forced to sell on the international market. In fact, energy-producing countries can, in extremis, restrict exports, right? And we face a very dangerous situation.
We have that opportunity now, would we, Henry?
We would, if we were a domestic energy producer, then that means, one, if global markets stay healthy, brilliant, we sell on the international market, and that is export revenue for Britain. But it means that if the crisis in Iran gets worse, the global energy market gets worse, and exporting countries start cutting exports, which will send our costs through the roof, we would have the ability to have a protected domestic supply, which we could prevent from exporting in turn.
Lastly, we're going to hear the local election campaign rolled out from Sir Keir Starmer later today. I've referenced already that within a couple of days, a lot of people who are fortunate enough to own their own homes will be paying more in council tax, water bills and everything like this. How much is the economy going to decide the events over the next few weeks prior to those locals?
I think the economy feeds through into nearly everything, to be honest. There are exceptional cases in Britain where a non-economic issue decides elections or decides how people vote, and that's certainly true for individual voters on issues of conscience and so on. But generally speaking, it's the economy. And especially when it's things like the inflation, the cost of living, not just discretionary expenditure, but unavoidable essentials like utilities and housing. That is the kind of thing that, if it's going in the wrong direction, no government is long for the world.
Henry Hill, journalist, commentator, former deputy editor of Conservative Home. Thanks for your input. Listening, Jess Ralston, who's head of energy at the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit. And where does the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit, where is it intelligence lies about more drilling in the North Sea? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, well, I think when it comes to this very polarised debate on the North Sea, we have to be super realistic about how much is left in the North Sea and what difference that would make to bills. So even by the industry's own estimates, around 90% of oil and gas in the North Sea is drained dry. It is in long-term decline. Everybody knows that. So getting a little bit more out in a few years' time I mean, what difference does that make in a longer term, very big decline of a basin that's very mature? And when it comes to
Claire
prices...
Sorry to talk over you. Claire Coutinho told us, truly I don't know, that Rosebank and Jackdaw could be online for this winter.
I mean, I think that's incredibly ambitious. I think that the oil and gas companies will say a lot of things right now because they're desperately trying to get tax breaks and scrapping of the windfall tax, which is incredibly popular with the public considering they made huge windfalls during the last energy crisis. So I think they're saying a lot of things right now to try and get that support amongst the Conservatives and other parties. But we've got to think about prices here. I mean, we all know that what happens to North Sea oil and gas is that it gets sold in the international markets. And so we have to pay the market price for it in order for it to come to the UK. And that means that we have to pay at the moment high prices to get it here. So when it comes to people's bills, this won't really help. And things that would help in longer term, getting away from the energy crises that we know come every 10 years or so, in the last few years it's been more common, is moving away from oil and gas, not doubling down on it.
But as we heard my other contributor say, in extremis, you don't have to sell on the international markets. And additionally, I can propose that we just bring in fresh legislation that we won't sell in the international market when we are confronted with these rising prices.
Well, maybe that's an option, but you'd have to get past oil and gas companies who quite like to be able to sell it on the international markets at those high prices. It might make the North Sea less investable if you suddenly change the way the whole market works and say that you have to sell to one country, which obviously they want at a discount. I mean, these are not charities. They're in it to make a profit. And so the current system that they've got at the moment allows them to do that.
But Rosebank could generate 500 million barrels. That seems like a vast amount to me, Jess.
When you look at the history of the North Sea, though, it's really not that much. I mean, we have had years of incredible amounts of oil and gas coming out of the North Sea, but that's not the situation we're in anymore. We're not in the glory days of the 1990s, and it's a long-term decline basin that's very mature, very hard to get stuff out. It's very expensive to get stuff out. And if it takes an international energy crisis to make the North Sea look profitable again, then perhaps it's not a very good long-term investment.
Jess Ralston, thank you. Head of Energy at the Energy and Climate Intelligence Unit. We'll take your calls on that. Also coming up after the news, the story we'll go back to, first story we looked at, Tony Blair talking about an unholy alliance involving the left that's led to anti-Semitism. We revisit that conversation too. It's 9:15, LBC News Headlines then, Dominic Ellis.
A cabinet minister has told Nick the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. Business and energy leaders are due to gather for talks at Downing Street to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. And millions of drivers will find out today how they can claim compensation for missold car finance. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier with sunny spells in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow on the M25 clockwise onto the QE2 bridge. It was after that car broke down earlier. It's been recovered for a while, but there are still delays of about 20 minutes. The M23 is very slow. Southbound Junction 9 at Gatwick Airport, there are delays of about 2 miles on the main carriageway because a car's broken down on the exit slip road. A lorry's broken down on the A2 westbound at the Falconwood interchange, and that means there are delays all the way back to the Danson interchange. The North Circular Road remains very busy westbound to Arnos Grove. There's been an accident at Bowes Road and only one lane is open. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan line and also on the Bakerloo line because of a shortage of trains.
This is LBC.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Imagine sweeping through green fields, floating 5 feet above ground, sun on your face as you slide by, on track to your destination. Not a care in the world, as you simply lean back. And before you know it, you're there. This is how travel should feel. And on our trains, it does. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel. You're driving down the back roads of Tuscany. The sun's setting. The wind's in your hair.
you're playing your favourite tunes. No, not that one. Much better. Could life be any sweeter? Of course it can. With the money you saved by comparing car hire prices through Kayak, you've got more to spend on some fresh, creamy gelato. Mmm. We'll take due scoops, per favore. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's go to what you're saying on social media about the idea of whether we drill or we do not drill. I know we've explored it, and we've explored it very recently in the light of this crisis. But there's going to be more talk today, because at the moment, Kemi Badenoch is on her way to an oil rig. Gordon says it's not true. There's only a small amount of North Sea oil. There's still a lot of oil for many years. It would just require more expensive drilling technology. Also, it doesn't seem to be stopping Norway from drilling. Same subject, this comes in. Oh, I'll have to shorten this. Michael says, more nonsense and isolated facts and discussions. If he's getting public finances in order and helping with household bills, let's focus on the biggest wins. I bet the biggest by a mile would be to rejoin the EU, as it would lower the interest paid on our debt. It would be a massive instant win of billions of pounds. I think probably the problems that we have, I mean, notwithstanding, they're paying. I don't know if you saw a piece in the papers on the weekend. Actually, in countries like France and Italy, obviously they're paying in euros, they're paying more than we are here at the pumps. They're unleaded and their diesel is more expensive than it is here. Same subject, looking at the idea of drilling. Eric in Enfield, where are we going to store gas if we produce our own? The last government effectively closed four storage facilities by not supporting Centrica with upgrading and completing necessary maintenance. So who's going to pay for all of that? And lastly, I've referenced Jackdaw. That is one of the two fields that the Conservatives are saying. Jackdaw and Rosebank are good to go. Chris in Fife, so closer he or she, Chris is going to be closer to it than me. Jackdaw is ready to roll logistically now. It's just awaiting a realistic environmental report. It could produce this year. Springbank will take, I think you mean Rosebank, don't you? Is it Rosebank? Will it take longer to get started? All right, we'll come back to that in a moment. But to the story with which we started the show, which I've got a lot of you involved, and a very powerful piece originally run by the US media, The Free Press, printed in yesterday's Sunday Times by Tony Blair, headlined, "We Must End Left's Unholy Alliance with the Islamists." And in it, he argues that the problem is under pressure. Many party activists and parts of the Muslim community have not made arguments, failing to take on the unholy alliance, as he referenced it. Now, if we're talking about this, it was appropriate to bring into the conversation Jonathan Hall, who is a KC and also the UK's independent review of terrorism legislation. And what of this idea that there is an unholy alliance between those on the left and some preaching an Islamic philosophy? Was Sir Tony right? This is a little of what Mr. Hall told me.
I think it is a total mistake to think that if you bring Islamists into the big tent, they will become more like you. I think what will happen is they will push you to become more like them. And in the case of anti-Semitism, I don't think that they are going to become less anti-Semitic. I think they will make those they are in bed with more anti-Semitic. So I agree with him. And I think it's worth, first of all, calling out. But secondly, I think even more important is doing something about it.
Such as what, Mr. Hall?
Well, I think there are two things. I've been thinking about this. On the whole, with terrorism, I think that the UK has been fairly effective when it's done two things. The first is rhetoric, and to say this is a problem. And here, in the case of attacks on Jews, is to say that it's an attack on all of us. The second thing is to do something about it. And I mean, here, I think it is about funding proper enforcement of existing laws, because my worry from the terrorism perspective is that at the moment, people are publicly painting a target on the back of Jews and saying they are legitimate targets because they are responsible for all the ills of the world in a way that I just don't remember seeing when I was growing up, that degree of hatred. And it just seems to me that it cannot be right that our current laws don't allow people to be prosecuted for targeting synagogues, Israeli-owned restaurants, for making comments about people which amount to saying, cleanse them off the face of the earth. So I think that we need to go beyond diagnosis. So I agree with Tony Blair, but something needs to be done. Rhetoric, in other words, saying we all suffer as a matter of national security if a minority is targeted in this way. It's not going to stop with Jews, but it's bad enough when it's with Jews. And secondly, concerted funding of a proper response.
Well, Jonathan Hall touching there, of course, on reactions that we hear from prime ministers or the leaders of countries such as France, Germany, Spain, the Netherlands, Australia and the United Kingdom. And Sir Tony writes, each high-profile incident is followed by ritualistic condemnation by political leaders. I have no doubt they mean what they say, says Tony Blair, but their words haven't stopped the attacks. And they haven't. The attacks just continue. But what of this idea that we have to try, and I know a lot of people can't see it, but there is a distinction as wide as you can imagine between the events of an Israeli government and what they do in Gaza and the surrounding areas, with Jewish people trying to live their lives in the United Kingdom with charity ambulances, bakers or whatever else it might be. This is a bit of your reaction, starting with Peter in Stirling.
I'd like to start by saying how disappointed I am. The Iraq war and Afghanistan aside, and those are some big burning asides, I do think that he was a great unifying figure when he was Prime Minister. I was still a kid at the time, but I remember him talking about his middle way, I think it was, or the third way or whatever, where he talked about bringing together those in the centre-left and centre-right. He has gone after one side of this. And I don't want to play the whole thing of saying, well, let's ignore the anti-Semitism, let's talk about Islamophobia. Let's talk about both on equal ground.
Williams in Harrow.
I want to say that it's wrong to burn the ambulances, of course. But, and I think it's naive for Mr. Blair to think there won't be a backlash against what's going on in the Gaza and in the West Bank.
Sophie in Wansford.
Tony Blair is a twit. He created a complete international mess. And I have no respect for his opinion, so he needs to be quiet, number one. Honestly, he's just completely denigrated this country's reputation in the world.
Hugo in Romford.
My initial reaction was, why is everyone, as usual, obsessed with when anything comes out for Jews or against Jews? You said to the one of the previous callers that if Donald Trump does something, that doesn't make Americans. That's not so correct in the sense of if Benjamin Netanyahu does something, it's not the Jews in England's fault. Because Jews are not Israelis necessarily.
But that was the point I was making, as Hugo referenced there. A lot of you, many of you, most of you, are puzzled by the actions of Donald Trump, but that doesn't mean that you then have negative emotions towards Americans. And a lot of you are furious with the actions of Benjamin Netanyahu, and that in some way, for some of you, seems to justify putting Jewish people in the harm in which they're currently experiencing in their lives. Or, as Tony Blair puts it, in its opposition to Israel, the left has found an animating cause. The war in Gaza has allowed it full rein. Parts of the left cast the Jewish community as supporters of the government of Israel, and Jews become fair game. Why is it that so many people struggle? They cannot differentiate between a Jewish person running a bakery here or a Jewish charity having some ambulances in North London and what Benjamin Netanyahu is doing in and around Gaza. They cannot. And as we heard from the callers, but it's awful, also awful what's happening with Muslims. Yes, it is. Of course it is. And if Muslim charity ambulances had been burnt to cinders, I'm sure Tony Blair's piece would have started on that. But to use a journalist's expression, it nosed in on, it started with, its introduction was about that attack, because those were the events of last week. That's what Tony Blair's referencing. That's why he's writing about it. But straight away, people say, but it's awful. We mustn't forget the other attack. Yes, of course it's awful. But there must be that distinction, just as I said about Trump. You don't hate all Americans because you might hate Donald Trump, do you? But it's North Sea oil. Let's talk about that. Diane's in Leicester. Diane, the point you want to make on that. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I don't know why it's politicised, you know, the energy that we get for this country.
Well, the government doesn't want to do it. That's why. I mean, they might be right, of course. We don't know. But we have a Labour government that doesn't want to do it and a Conservative government that says we should do it. So that is essentially why it's politicised.
But then, I'll go on to the wasted wind tracker every day. And as of 9 a.m. this morning, paying to turn off the wind turbines because there's no grid or storage capacity could have powered Scotland and Wales, you know. So the more turbines that Ed Miliband builds, the more subsidies we're paying to turn them off because of the grid and the storage.
What do you...
It's as simple as that.
Is it simple? What do you think should be done with what we are told are considerable oil resources under the North Sea? It's not going to see us through for the rest of our lives, but it's certainly going to help in times of extremeness. How do you react to that?
Even the Prime Minister said we're going to need gas and all. Didn't say that 50 years or whatever in Parliament last week?
Yes.
So why not use what we've got rather than ship it around the world, paying extra money, causing more green issues? It's just simple to me, but what do I know?
You probably know a lot more than they do. But lastly, as I say, you can spend a pound once, and if you're going to invest so that we would have wind power and we would have solar power, they would say, the government would say, Ed Miliband would certainly say, that has to be the future.
Well, yeah, but then you need, it's like buying a car without an engine. You need the grid and the storage.
Yeah, and that's the point you make on that.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for that, Diane. We will never know, I suppose, in reality. Let's pick up, this is North Sea that's got you speaking. Do be sure to sign your emails. This person's forgotten, but hey, Paul hasn't. How many barrels of gas are left in the North Sea is the wrong question to the answer of overpriced petrol and diesel. The gas extracted from the North Sea is owned by the extracting companies prior to being processed and sold on the open market to the highest bidder. The UK receives limited royalties for the drilling licences and some limited company taxation, neither of which would dent the size of the price rises due to the illegal war in the Middle East, which countries have the largest gas reserves and have not been attacked. Paul, thank you. I had to shorten that down a little bit, and I do have to shorten some of them because in some instances, so that we can get them on, I have to make them a little more brief, and we'll have more of those in a moment. All right, more North Sea oil calls to come. Let's go to the streets, literally. Mobility scooters and electric wheelchairs could be allowed to travel at speeds of up to 20 miles an hour. Charities have complained that current rules are outdated and unfairly penalise those who need higher specification mobility devices. They point to the fact that the legislation is 50 years old. Now the government is said to be considering the changes to better reflect modern technology. I don't know if you've ever been in a supermarket where some of these folk are in these electric wheelchairs. And to put it politely, some of them have a few issues as it is, travelling at the speed they are. If they had the capability of 20 miles an hour going down the aisles of Asda or Waitrose, isn't that a recipe for absolute disaster? We'll take your views on that. Saunders, let's talk about the North Sea oil, the other side of the news, when I can give you a better run at it. And we'll pick up, as I say, on those mobility scooters. What's their current speed limit? Why doesn't it say? Let me try and find out what they can currently go out and tell you the other side of the news. It's 9:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. Let's get the news. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's to host business and energy leaders in Downing Street to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. Number 10 says the aim is to hear directly from firms and discuss how ministers and the private sector can work together. The Environment Secretary has told Nick the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. Speaking to LBC this morning, Emma Reynolds says the Chancellor is keeping a close eye on rising oil prices due to the conflict in the Middle East. And the final details of the compensation scheme for drivers missold car finance agreements will be published today. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said 14 million deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, drier in the south with sunny spells, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
At Kia, we know that inspiration begins with a first. Your first job, your first love, your first home. Now it's time for your first drive in the new Kia EV2 at our First Drive weekends. It's your chance to be one of the first to test drive the Kia EV2 with its innovative technology and elegant eye-catching design. It's small in size, but big in personality. Discover what driving electric really means. Search Kia First Drive weekends to reserve your place today.
Kia, movement that inspires.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Saunders, I'm going to come to your call. We're going to talk North Sea Oil with you, Saunders, in just a moment. We've got it currently. Mobility scooters and powered wheelchairs can travel at 4 miles an hour on pavements, 8 miles an hour on roads. That could go to 20 miles an hour. But also, a parliamentary committee said any changes would need safety measures, such as helmets or protective body wear, whatever that means. Well, so that to use your mobility scooter now, you're going to have a crash helmet. And then you just want to go down the road to get, as I said earlier, to get to Astor Sainsbury's. How's that going to work? We'll look in that in more detail after we go back a drilling, or are we not going drilling? Saunders in Islington. Saunders, what do you say? Good morning.
Morning, Nick.
Hello,
yeah, it's a very tricky one for me because I work in the sustainability space, but I also am fundamentally aware that we can't just turn off gas tomorrow. Mm. You know, as much as I would like that to be the world that we live in, as much as I see superpowers like in China completely investing in only renewable energy and de-investing in gas and oil in very, very substantial ways in the last sort of 5 years or so, I understand that we aren't in that position yet. I very much hope we can get there quickly when it comes to the work that Ed Bielemann is doing and his team with renewable energy and things like home better efficiency in the house and stuff. However, this is where I look at these things. When I hear about Claire Coutinho and I see what the Conservatives are saying about the want and desire to tap into the North Sea, I just can't help but think, who is it for? They say it's going to benefit our pockets. But so I'm assuming that it will be going under government ownership then, and the profit will only go back into the system. It won't go to any private companies. Obviously, that's not the case. So it feels a little bit to me like a wood for the trees moment. Is who is this actually serving? Is it serving us, or is it serving the people that they regularly lobby for? And I wonder the cost involved of getting these new offshore projects going. Yes, a lot of it will be swallowed by the private companies that will win the projects to do it. But does this not feel a little bit COVID inquiry all over again?
When you say you're in sustainability, what is it that you do, Saunders?
So I actually help companies in the media industry operate a bit more with less negative impact, so reduce their carbon emissions and be able to do what they do, keep growing, keep making great films and television, but do it at a lesser impact on the environment, basically.
So typically, what sort of measures would you recommend or suggest? What is it? How is it that they can trim their costs or excesses in that area?
I mean, it's a bit of a sliding scale. You know, on one side, you can look at very simple things like if they use a lot of taxi and courier companies, you can make sure you're only using those that are zero emission fleets, which there are many around, the very competitive ones as well. Mm-hmm. However, you can go right down the line of if it's a country that potentially stores a lot of data with data centers around the world, you might be able to say, well, if we actually move from this data center to this one, which is zero carbon energy procured, as opposed to this one, which pulls a lot from the national grid and doesn't have any zero carbon energy. One company I did that with had a 91% reduction in their data storage emissions just by moving company.
Lastly, then, where are you on North? You say do not proceed with North Sea Oil.
I understand also because I'm in a bit of a privilege where I had good conversations with people in different markets. Understand that there is like a very much more efficient way of doing it than we potentially think about. You know, it's not like spewing oil everywhere. So there's very meticulously designed ways that are trying to limit the impact. However, if the end goal 10 years, 50 years down the line is to be non-reliant on any sort of oil and gas because we know the damage it's doing to people and planet, and I say people specifically because wars are literally going on at the moment connected with it, why do we want to still be involved in it? Why should we not be putting that money into speeding up the transition out of renewables and keeping what we have just to top up while we need it, but not doubling down and reinvesting on more of the problem?
Thanks, Saunders. We'll take more calls on that, but I want to come to this idea of mobility scooters and electric wheelchairs possibly being allowed to travel at speeds of up to 20 miles an hour. Karen Pierce is chair and co-founder of the Wheelchair Alliance. Is this something that you and your members have been pushing for? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks very much for giving us the opportunity to comment on this.
We would be pushing for a change in the law. Currently, it's outdated. The terminology is completely unacceptable. The term is based on a law that states around the use of highways for invalid carriages.
Right.
So that in itself is unacceptable. And the current law says that wheelchairs that go greater than 8 miles an hour have to be used with a driving license. Now, if you're under 16, you can't get a driving license. Therefore, you can't drive your powered wheelchair on the road. You can't drive it on the pavement. Therefore, you can only drive it in your own home. So that already is discriminatory. We would challenge a speed limit, not least that other road users that are using electrically powered vehicles such as e-bikes and e-scooters have a limitation on them of 15.5 miles an hour. So we would have to push at a higher limit, knowing that the government would want to look at the experience of all road users. So we would include wheelchair users as well as car users and pedestrians. They'll have to look at safety elements. We appreciate that. And also innovation. There's new technologies. So people are using things like power add-ons, which is a power addition to a manual wheelchair that can be used in a cycle lane and on cycle paths, etc., etc. So we would challenge the law and we'd look at an upper limit, knowing that there'd need to be discussions on that. 8 miles an hour seems very slow, particularly if you're thinking of using a powered wheelchair, which by law you would have to go on the road if it goes above 8 miles an hour, with juggernauts, etc. So, yes, we would challenge that. One of the other things that you mentioned...
About the safety of the person using the chair and the safety of others? Because in some instances, I would imagine their physical abilities are going to be limited.
I think you're right, Nick. People's physical abilities are limited.
Mm.
One of the things you mentioned earlier on in the introduction was the government saying that they'd have to think about using helmets as a compulsory item and so on. Cyclists don't have to compulsorily use helmets currently, whether that's right or wrong. But sadly,
there are instances, sadly, of pedestrians being, in some very rare cases, being killed or in more frequently being seriously injured by cyclists. Isn't this just going to add to the mayhem on the road?
I agree. So there is some, and I have a personal view, if I'm allowed to have a personal view, that I think all cyclists should be using cycle helmets. That's a personal view. But I do think we should challenge this very prescriptive approach to people with a disability.
But it's for their safety, Karen, isn't it?
I agree, but there is an assumption...
20 miles an hour is quite a lick. I mean, it's the speed limit in many parts of London now and other built-up areas around the country. 20 miles an hour, if I'm just sitting in a wheelchair and I'm perhaps not fully physically in control automatically of all my limbs, that's a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
I think there's an assumption by government and society, perhaps being made, about disabled people being able to assess their own environment and take risks. So somebody with a disability that means that they have got limitations wouldn't take a risk like that. And our proposal that you're looking at 20 miles an hour, it's opened up a dialogue that was never there before. We accept that it could well be less than that, but there is an assumption that people with a physical disability also have the inability to assess their environment and drive at an appropriate speed, all people with a disability would consider that.
But what about when they get on the pavements or they're going through a shopping mall?
The same goes on a pavement in the shopping mall. What about a parent running along the pavement with their pushchair, their child in their pushchair?
They're not going to be getting up to 20 miles an hour, are they?
But they're talking about 20 miles an hour on the road, Nick, not on the pavement.
How does the limiter work on an electric wheelchair? It doesn't know that it's on a shopping mall or not a road, does it?
But the individual is not allowed to drive at 20 miles an hour on the pavement.
Well, we're not allowed to drive at 80 miles an hour on the motorway, but people do. That's the reality, Karen.
It is, but there is an assumption here that people are just not going to assess their environment.
But I mean, the reality is,
motor cars will be overtaken by people in electric wheelchairs because we struggle to get to 20 miles an hour, and you'll actually, it would be quicker to get around town in a wheelchair than it would in a car.
I think this has been taken out of context.
Pardon?
They're not allowed to use the bus lane. They're not allowed to go anywhere. And currently,
hold on. There's no license plate on an electric wheelchair, is there?
No, there's not. But
well, much like bicycles, which choose to go whichever lane they want to do, one-way streets or whatever, isn't that just going to add... I'm really concerned about someone getting hurt in one of these chairs, or indeed hurting someone else, for that matter.
I think that the critical thing here, Nick, is that people are talking about this at this moment in time. Oh. As the law stands, and now there is conversation, somebody in a powered wheelchair is not allowed to get out of their own house because they're limited.
I know, and that's wrong, but Karen, how do you know... The wheelchair user, how does he or she know how fast they're going? Don't have speedos, do they?
There is an indication of how fast they're going on a wheelchair.
What, they've got a speedometer?
There's an indication on a powered wheelchair there is a limiter, so they know how fast they're going.
Well, it says 8 miles an hour, or 10 or 12, or whatever.
There'll be a limiter on there. Yeah.
All right. Well, it has started a conversation. You got that right. Karen Pierce, chairs and co-founder of the Wheelchair Alliance. Thank you for your input on that. My goodness, there's been enough challenges on the road. I'll come to work in a wheelchair. It would be quicker in some parts of London. Peter's in Lincoln. Peter, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your view on this? Do you think it's made sound sense?
It doesn't to me. I did misunderstand. I thought the proposal for the 20 miles an hour would include pavements as well as roads.
Well, you can't...
I didn't realise that. It hadn't been said.
No, but I mean, they won't have any way of controlling it. It's a bit like, you know, a bicycle shouldn't be used on the pavement, but we all know it is, and sometimes they clatter along at 20 miles an hour on the pavement. You'll have seen that.
My initial point was that the pavements in the area where I live are so uneven.
Right.
I wouldn't want to go 20 miles an hour on those.
But would you want to go 20 miles an hour on the road? I mean, it's deadly for everyone, isn't it?
No, not on the roads around here. There are so many potholes, I would be in one of those.
I just don't think they've thought it through. Peter, I think we've lost your line. Thank you for that. This is Ben. The whole thing of mobility scooters is making me think of Jeremy Clarkson in his Top Gear and a terrifying moment on the A3. I don't remember. I remember when, didn't he drive one of those old blue, I think they used to call it, was it called invalid cars or something? And he deliberately turned it over, deliberately rocked it to one side, and they had to push him back up. Kevin says, this is ludicrous. There's no way that this can be policed. If you're limited to the use of a mobility scooter because of physical impairment, there's no way you can mix with regular traffic. We cannot keep finding new ways to mix pedestrians, cyclists and vehicular traffic. It will be catastrophic. I totally agree. I mean, the campaigner says at least it's starting a conversation, but I think it's a conversation with fatal consequences, isn't it? If you use a wheelchair, electric or otherwise, or mobility scooter, I'm sorry, mobility scooter, do give us a call and we'll discuss that further. It's 9:45, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is preparing to host energy and business leaders in Downing Street to discuss the economic impact of the Iran war. A cabinet minister has told LBC that extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review, and police have been given more time to question a man arrested on suspicion of attempted murder after a car hit several people in Derby city centre. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK, some sunny spells and drier in the south, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25, anti-clockwise to junction 24 at Potter's Bar is because a car broke down earlier. It has just been recovered, but there are still delays of about 2 miles. And then also on the M25, anti-clockwise, it's slow from junction 13 at Stain to 12 at the M3 after an accident that happened earlier. Long delays on the A2 westbound up to the Falconwood interchange. It's because a lorry has broken down and those queues stretch all the way back to the Danson interchange. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Marylebone flyover and the Northern roundabout. That's causing delays again. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Metropolitan and Bakerloo lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
It's probably another example of Osborne's razor, but I am wondering this morning how on earth we've become a country where almost no burglaries are solved.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
How about Specsave ears?
Not sure.
Do you get it? Specsave ears.
Yeah, but no.
Oh, okay. Specs, and we also do hearing two savers.
Think about it. Should have gone to Specs and we also do hearing two savers. Can't see it catching on.
Okay, so we're saying Specsavers do eyes and ears. Senses savers.
Technically true.
Yeah.
But actually terrible.
Oh.
At Specsavers, we're hearing experts too, and have been for over 20 years.
Oh, should we just stick to Specsavers then?
Yeah.
Book a free hearing check today.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Dreaming of a new kitchen? Getting started couldn't be easier. At Wix, you can begin planning your new kitchen with our design consultants. Simply arrange a free home measure or an in-store design consultation. Book your free kitchen design appointment and turn all your ideas into reality at Wix.
Go from bucket list to booked with EasyJet. Get package holidays from £319 per person and flights from £32 one way. So stop dreaming, stop scrolling, stop umming and ahhing. Book now at EasyJet.com and get your holidays sorted today. Get out there. Selected dates and flights April to September. Limited availability. Holidays after protected. T's and C's apply.
When laughter's guaranteed. When there's fun and games with big names. When it's something everyone in the family loves watching.
Who do you think the surprise guest is?
No way you'll top last week's.
I think they have.
Nothing brings us together like Bray TV. And the TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, packed full of entertainment for a big night in. Search TV licence together.
The Paramount Plus spring sale is on with over 60% off Paramount Plus. Sign up to stream every episode of exclusive shows like the critically acclaimed hit Landman, brand new series The Madison starring Michelle Pfeiffer and Kurt Russell, and new Yellowstone series Marshals. All for only $2.99 a month, only on Paramount Plus. But hurry, offer ends Tuesday. Standard monthly plan only for eligible customers. Saving when compared to the full regular monthly price. After 2 months, auto renews at $7.99 a month unless cancelled. 18 plus T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
This is what you're saying about the idea of these mobility scooters, Gary in Medway. I'm in my 70s. I can't imagine myself in a mobility scooter dressed in full leathers and a crash helmet to get my newspaper. They think I was being robbed. Jonathan in Deal, are you finding it hard to grasp? A mobility scooter will still only be allowed to travel at 4 miles an hour in a pedestrian environment, but when travelling on a road, it could have more chance in traffic. But I don't think most of them have speedos. How is that person going to know? Mark Omar, I think this is the reality. There's an old boy who lives on my road. He's been given an ASBO for driving down alleys too fast and going around corners without due care. Well, imagine if he could be doing 20 miles an hour. Frances is in Westminster. You're on the radio, Frances. What do you say? Good morning.
Good morning. I live in Westminster. We obviously have all the bicycles on pavements and all the rest
of it. Oh, nightmare.
A complete nightmare, but I do believe that somebody who is given the ability to go 20 miles an hour in a powered vehicle, which is what it is, should have at one stage in their life had a driving license and be able to pass road safety conditions. If you're over 70, you have to be able to see properly and guarantee that you are safe to drive on the road, even if it's only 20 miles an hour in a vehicle.
Cyclists don't have to do that, Frances.
Well, I know, and I think that's another thing. I mean, they are as dangerous as anything, and they can go jolly fast. But I do think that pensioners should be allowed mobility vehicles, probably not dressed in leathers, but with a crash cap, but they should at least be able to prove that they know the road, have road safety abilities and have had it during the course of their life.
Lastly, Frances, you live in a very busy part of London. What is? Are you a cyclist? Are you a motorist? What do you find the biggest threat to safety when you are using the roads?
Cyclists, but I don't ride bicycles. I broke an arm when I was a teenager, and that was enough for me. I don't, you know, it hasn't been convenient to have a bicycle. I still drive at Sadiq Khan would rather we didn't have cars.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's another thing. You know, as long as one has that independence, and I feel very strongly that pensioners should be able to have independence of...
I agree with you, but I'm just nervous of a pensioner with disabilities having the possibility to travel at 20 miles an hour in a heavy wheelchair.
I couldn't agree more, and perhaps an occupational therapist assessment should be part of the conditions of being able to own a powered, 20-mile-an-hour powered vehicle.
Frances, look after yourself on the pavements. I'm not particularly good at physics, but there's something called velocity, isn't it? It's mass times speed times something else. All I know is it's going to hurt like hell if one of these comes into you at 20 miles an hour. Pandora's in Putney. The point you want to make, Pandora. Good morning.
Good morning. I agree with what the lady before Frances said, but I'm worried. How can they tell if you're using the road or if you're in a pedestrianised area?
No, I know,
area?
Precisely. It won't have a limiter on it. It won't suddenly think, oh, now I'm in Asda, I won't go at 20 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, maybe there is a case for them to use the segregated cycle lanes, because that way they can go up to 20 miles per hour. But the pedestrians be safe from that, and then maybe the car traffic be safe from that.
But don't you think it's putting them at real risk that they can suddenly do? I mean, that they will be going the same speed as a bus. It's just madness.
I don't have a problem if they're competent and they've passed a driving test.
Well, but some of them won't.
They need
have done
to
it.
Retake it. They need to take it again and have
Hold on. If someone has never passed their driving test, obviously they can't take it again because they never took it the first time. And in some instances, of course, they might be missing limbs or have certain physical disabilities. So are they going to take a test just for a chair? Do you think that...
I think that would be a good idea.
Right. So to use an electric wheelchair, you have to have some form of driving test?
Yes.
Okay, I wonder how easy or otherwise it's going to be. We can't even get... I was going to say kids' driving tests. They're not all young people. Of course, other people have to take the driving test. I mean, people are waiting months and months and months to get their driving test for regular cars. Now, if we introduce them as well for wheelchairs... Phew, Pandora, thank you. Steve's in Reading. Steve, your reaction to this story. Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Well, I just think the time's come now where any vehicle on the road should be licensed. I think, because, you know, now we've got these 20-mile-an-hour speed limits. I mean, I drive HGVs and...
Do you?
And
oh, my
and that,
God.
Yeah.
I don't envy you that.
And I get overtaken by cyclists doing 20-mile-an-hour, you know. You know, and this is the kind of thing that's happening now. And the thing is, you know, there's no... how can I put it? You know,
there's no regulation. It's the Wild West. It's the Wild West out there, isn't it?
That's right. And that's for these e-bikes. Well, I mean, effectively speaking, they're motorbikes, aren't they? Any vehicle that's motorised, be it electric or whatever, you know, it's...
Do you drive through London ever, Steve?
I drive regularly through London. I've actually got a little vintage bus business where we do like weddings and things
that.
So, yeah, I'm driving the old route masters and things like that. Yeah, so
because you get to those at certain time of night or rush hour, you see all the bicycles. They all get in that front box and then they all take off. And if you're driving a bus, but if you're driving an HGV and they're all weaving in and out, I mean, it must be absolutely petrifying at times.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I've had them coming from both sides of me, you know. They're down the inside, yeah. Sorry,
and I don't think we need to throw wheelchairs into the mix, do we? Mobility's...
Well, that could not happen.
How many vintage buses have you got?
Oh, I mean, colleague, we've kind of got, like, sort of five between us.
What's the pride of the fleet?
Oh, pride of the fleet's probably our 1947 RT. I think, actually, it's a 56-seater.
It's not like one with the open top that they had around the time of the Second World War, is it? It's got an open top tech.
No, it's not an open top, but you know the old Chris Clifford's Summer Holiday film?
Yes. It's one of those. It's beautiful.
It's a route master. Yeah,
beautiful. Yeah. Safe driving. Thanks, Steve. Liam in Harrow. Liam, you're on the radio. Your reaction. We're now going to suddenly hurl wheelchairs into the mix on the roads. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Look, I'm registered as a blind person. We've got enough to deal with kids and scooters, bicycles, electric bikes.
I know, everywhere you
look. We want to be able to hear it coming anyway, yeah? Mm. It's electric, yeah? So, and what about these people? Because they're going to get 20 miles per hour, some of the youths are going to just steal it for a joyride.
I think it's a real... I can't see any sense or logic to it at all, Liam.
Why? Why do they need it at 20 miles? Look, it's enough speed that they're doing. Nobody needs to rush anywhere, right?
Mm.
It's there for there's mobility for getting them on the shopping or whatever. That's fine. You don't need 20 miles per hour to get there.
Liam, thank you. David in Erith. David, you're on the radio. What can you tell me to this? Good morning.
In next year, I've got a large mobility scooter.
You've got an mobility scooter, have you, sir?
Yep. Right. It's quite large. And like, yeah, it's got a switch on it, which it in mode 1 to 4 miles an hour, mode 2 to 8. Uh-huh. And then before I actually do the switch on it, I've had GPS on it, and it would do 18 miles an hour.
Now, you can get up to 18 miles an hour on your mobility scooter.
Right, but the thing is, I never take it any more than 8, because any more than 8, they are just not safe.
But you could, should you so desire, you could increase the speed, could you?
Yep, which is ridiculous, you know. The reason why is because on the EU, they can actually... go up to, I think, to 25 kilometres an hour, which is about 15, isn't it?
Right, you know? Okay.
So just safe.
Lastly, and clearly you're very careful, but how safe would you feel if you were able to do 20 miles an hour?
That there would be suicidal.
Say again, sorry?
That there would be suicidal.
Suicidal, yeah. Well, you look after yourself, David. Thank you for that.
Take
it easy. Yep, be well. Thank you for that. Chris in Manchester, there was an incident locally a few months ago. A poor lady lost control of these on a pavement, ended up head-on collision with a motor vehicle and lost her life. To increase the speed limit is ridiculous. Marco says, a disabled wheelchair with motors can go the same speed as a car in roads in London, and we're being told to slow down. Is this for real? Well, certainly it's a real discussion, and the parliamentary committee is looking at it. Whether it, of course, is implemented is another matter. Well, we need to knock our gear into neutral because we've come to the end of the show. If you missed any, you can listen back on Free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it's hard to know where to start today, isn't it? The speed with which people who attacked Keir Starmer for not joining Donald Trump's ludicrous war are now blaming him, or trying to blame him, for the impacts of said ludicrous war, most obviously on fuel prices. Well, if we could harness that, then we probably would be able to give away energy. But that's the nature of British politics, isn't it? Drill, baby, drill has become the latest phrase used by stupid people to disguise the fact that they don't understand anything. Is it going to work? Are attempts to pin the blame for the costs of Donald Trump's war on the man, the Prime Minister, who opposed it, are they going to succeed?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer is preparing to host business leaders in Downing Street to discuss the economic impact of the Iran war. Talks are expected to focus on the blockade of the Strait of Hormuz, which has disrupted global oil supplies. The government says it plans to help those who need it most if energy bills spiral. But the Shadow Energy Secretary, Claire Coutinho's, told LBC this morning the UK shouldn't be relying on foreign imports of oil and gas.
Last year, we lost a third of our refineries in Britain because of these crippling carbon taxes that the government is choosing to impose. So again, this comes back to our reliance on imports. We should be making the most of our own refineries, not driving them out of business. We should be making the most of the North Sea rather than increasing our imports of foreign gas. We should be making the most of what we could produce in Britain, and that's the most important thing for our energy security.
The Chancellor will join a virtual meeting of G7 ministers later and urge them to accelerate the move away from fossil fuels. Rachel Reeves will argue it's the only way to get off the roller coaster of international oil and gas markets and cut bills for good. Separately, the Environment Secretary has told LBC the option of extending the freeze on fuel duty beyond September remains under review. Emma Reynolds says the Chancellor is keeping a close eye on rising oil prices due to the conflict in the Middle East. Police have been given more time to question a man arrested after 7 people were hit and injured by a car in Derby. A 36-year-old was detained in the city centre on Saturday night on suspicion of attempted murder. The final details of the compensation scheme for drivers missold car finance agreements will be published today. The Financial Conduct Authority previously said 14 million deals between 2007 and 2024 were unfair. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
It is thought that each missold PCP or hire purchase finance deal could be eligible for around £700. And it's all because of a scandal that meant customers were not properly told about the levels of commission that were being paid by lenders to car dealers.
And Sean Dyche and Roberto De Zerbi are among the favourites to replace Igor Tudor at Tottenham Hotspur. The interim boss left Spurs yesterday after just 44 days in the job. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 74 points at 10,041. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, scattered showers across northern areas of the UK through Monday. Drier with sunny spells in the south. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Another day, another headline. Reporters talk about green shoots or what AI will bring us. The naysayers will see bubbles, not booms, or maybe for once, there's nothing new to report. Whatever is announced next, we're here to help guide you through the noise. We've helped Britain invest through 45 years of change. That's why we're the UK's number one investment and savings platform trusted by 2 million people. Hargreaves Lansdown, helping Britain invest for it all. Investment returns vary. For claim verification, visit hl.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. No, really it is. And you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Long may that continue. It's a good one today. There's something a bit strange happening in the world. I don't know if you've noticed, and I think it's probably far too early to celebrate, but the engines or the sources, the institutions that generally dominate discourse in this country have never, odd though this may sound, they've never looked less powerful. The attempts to staple the United Kingdom to the United States and Israel when they launched this hideous war in Iran have failed miserably. I think the attitudes of most of the public towards Gaza demonstrates that the engines that traditionally dominate discourse in this country are failing. Tony Blair weighing in this weekend, apparently not noticing that his credibility disappeared quite possibly forever the moment he joined Trump's Board of Peas. And the attempts now to somehow blame Keir Starmer for the economic impact of the war that he opposed, I don't want to say bravely opposed, but he certainly opposed it in the face of ludicrous criticism and opposition from people who either don't understand anything or pretend not to understand anything because that's what they are paid to do. And listen, I've given up trying to tell the difference. I mean, what do? You take a Badenoch or a Little John. Do they not understand anything when they talk about how we've got to do everything we can to support the war, or I've never been more ashamed to be British that Keir Starmer's not joining in? Or do they just pretend not to understand things because that's what they are paid to do in the case of professional commentators, or what they somehow think voters want in the face of ludicrous politicians? I do not know. But we turn our attention, I think, inevitably today to the relationship between fuel costs, all costs, actually, and what is going on in the Middle East. I don't know that we're going to do a Donald Trump-based conversation today, at least not directly. I oscillate. Do you oscillate? I oscillate between thinking it's not only essential but also fascinating to try to analyse what is going on, and thinking that it's utterly pointless anyway. It's like trying to make sense of a blancmange, you know, trying to predict which way it will wobble next, or whatever figure of speech or metaphor you prefer. So I oscillate. Today is Monday. I do not know what we will do tomorrow. I don't even know for sure what we're going to do today, to be honest with you, which is problematic given that we're 6 minutes into the show. But I don't think we're going to do a sort of direct Donald Trump question. If we do, it will be somewhere along the lines of what the hell happens if this goes on for ages. But I think we know one of the most obvious and immediate answers to that. Very simply, everything goes up in price. There's quite a depressing story in the news today. I don't know if you saw it, about job vacancies going up briefly until the war started. It was one of those little glimmers of hope that was just about, if you talk about the oil tanker of the United Kingdom and the ludicrous inheritance that the Labour government received when they won the last election, beginning to turn things round, and then there is a war. Then there is a war that the economic impacts of which haven't really been seen for about 50 years, potentially. Not me saying that, remember. It's Gulf states comparing it to Suez, and it's the International Energy Authority comparing it to the oil crisis of the 1970s. And that's what, what I really want to do is a bit nebulous. And I can't do it without you. So if you don't want to do this, then we'll find something else to do. But I'm really interested today in energy. I'm interested in the politics of it, obviously, whether or not you think they're going to successfully blame Keir Starmer for the costs of the war that they attacked him for opposing. It is genuinely surreal. I don't like the characterization of my country, because it offends me in some ways as a place where stupid is God. But some days it's really hard to resist, isn't it? The idea that the people who get the big bucks are now either pretending to understand the situation in the North Sea or preparing to blame Keir Starmer for the economic impacts of the war that he opposed and refused in the face of quite extraordinary abuse from a foreign leader, Donald Trump in this case, to join. They're going to try to blame him for it. Whether or not you think that will work is interesting to me, politically interesting to me. It's obviously cost of living related, but cost of fuel specifically. But here's the question that I think is actually more important. And I want you to, if you think this is an easy question to answer, I'd like you to remember that for a lot of people listening, it won't be. In fact, for a lot of people listening, what you think is fairly straightforward and obvious will be completely invisible. Because if you look at what happened after Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine and after Donald Trump attacked Iran, you will realise that our dependency on fossil fuels remains potentially crippling. Ed Miliband, the Energy Secretary, is dedicated to two things. He's dedicated to self-sufficiency and energy security. So they're very similar to each other, effectively. The idea is that we should, and politicians